Yep, central time zone coming up.
Yeah, I could see all the Magic Eye ones. I was actually pretty good at it. You had to, people said you had to unfocus your eyes and stuff, but that wasn't really it. You had to basically do the opposite of crossing them, and it took a lot of like relaxation to get that happening.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I went wrong. It was like you're supposed to just relax your focus. And I couldn't quite. I mean, I tried that, but I could never. And it doesn't matter what example I had. I thought, oh, you should be able to see that. I was like, I can't see it. What is it supposed to be? Oh, it's a ship. I can't see a ship. I can't see anything. What must? Are you sure it's a ship? It's a ship. Are you sure?
Well, the best example I heard was you had to look 3 feet into the picture. And I'll be damned if I could ever look 3 feet into anything.
Yeah, if you could, that was a way to do it. If you could focus on something 3 feet behind the picture and then have someone move the picture into your line of view without actually moving your eyes, and it you had to really be relaxed for that, it could happen. You could see it. But we are coming up on the next New Year's Eve. So we got Mexico, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and the central time zone of the U.S. and Canada. Happy New Year's.
Woo! Do you want to listen
Happy
to it
New
live?
Year's, Kansas?
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
There it goes, right now.
I had my Happy New Year an hour ago, you losers.
Happy New Year, Chicago, and
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Verbal.
Happy New Year, Coz.
Hey, fuck, we have dude, no doesn't... audio on the OG streams.
2013, I feel so welcome.
And parts of Mexico.
Claude, dude, it doesn't count because you don't drink anyway.
Oh, so I don't get a new year?
No, you get to relive 2012, I'm sorry.
Wait, you don't drink? Year? What the hell, man?
I don't drink.
Don't
and
worry, Claude, I got you covered over here, buddy.
You don't drink, you don't eat food.
I know. I like Linux.
He just survives in a Linux-powered drip. That's what it is.
No, I think it's pure coffee drip because he's been on here since 7 a.m.
So is Pokey, I think. He was certainly on when I signed on.
Yeah, I think I logged in around 5:30.
Damn.
Can you guys hear me?
That's yes. Not coffee, yeah. Pokey. That's crack. Well,
yeah.
Yep.
Not much of a marathon if somebody doesn't need a whole 24
hours. Man, I thought
hours.
It was sugar, but that explains a lot.
Yeah, now you guys know why Klaatu is so skinny. He doesn't eat meat. He doesn't drink. He's got nothing to get anything out of it.
Just swills caffeine.
I was going to say, I don't drink either.
He is here on willpower alone.
Hey, I drink plenty of coffee, and I ain't no little fella.
Unless you count Red Bull.
Speaking of coffee, I love coffee.
Hey, my wife said if you cut my wrists, I'd bleed coffee.
I think our neighbors are shooting off guns outside again.
Yeehaw.
I wish I was next to your neighbors.
I got lots of coffee for Christmas, and that was a good thing.
Nice.
I got a bag of Cuban coffee for Christmas. That was pretty awesome.
Cool. I'll get the extremes back.
Is that legal?
I got a.
It is in Canada, Klaatu.
There you go.
Oh, man.
No, I got this legal, little gadget for my Keurig.
It's just not the packing material.
Hey, is Cuban coffee like Cuban cigars? It's not really worth it.
No, it was actually really, really strong coffee. It had a really distinct flavor.
Cool.
Yeah, they brew it differently down there, too.
Well, I've had Cuban coffee, you know, what just like there's Turkish and Greek coffee, but I'm talking, you know, what I was meaning is the coffee bean itself.
Yeah, my wife gave me a it was a 5-kilogram bag of Cuban coffee beans that were vacuum sealed that she got when she went down to Cuba like in March of this past year, and she somehow managed to hide from me all year long. And so that was like my big present, was this huge bag of coffee beans. And the first batch of beans that I did, I ground them up and I put them in my French press, and oh man, it was just like a kick in the ass.
You're reminding me that I need to go get a new grinder. Right now I'm dealing with my Keurig, which is okay.
Actually, my grinder, I have this old grinder that was made in like 1919. I'm not sitting in front of it right now. It's a hand grinder, and you grind, you dump all your coffee beans in the top of it, and you grind. It's got a manual crank, and you just spin it around.
Cobra 2, you are such a Gentoo user.
Yes, he is.
You didn't have to hand grind your own
grind coffee it beans. Up.
Hooray for Gentoo users.
Woohoo, Gentoo!
I plug the grinder in and I turn it on and it grinds the coffee. I don't have to hand crank it.
Yeah.
I've got one of those too, but it grinds it up too fine. It's like this little powder that all sticks together. I like to have a little bit of grit to it where it doesn't pack itself.
Well, here's an important thing with a hand crank grinder. In the morning, when you haven't had that first cup of coffee, it's a whole lot quieter and it doesn't hurt your head as much.
That's why I got a Keurig.
It also doesn't wake up your wife.
That too.
What Cobra 2 is not telling you is he can't use electric grinder because batteries don't work in Canada because it's too damn cold.
He's freaking Amish. Okay, damn, that was right.
Yeah, it was pretty cold today right now.
Yeah.
Hey, it got Amish. Below freezing here, and everybody thought it was was bundled up.
Well, hell, man, I'm from Georgia. It's fucking cold up here.
Okay, well, I'm not too far from Georgia myself.
Yeah, it got down, all the way to, 55 degrees today out here in Southern California. It was terrible.
Shut up.
So going back to coffee.
Hey, you know, I thought when I grew up in just outside of Los Angeles, you know, and I thought, you know, it got hot there. And then I came to the southeast. Then I found out what the fuck hot meant.
There is nothing like the heat of Florida in August, man. That's terrible over there. I'll stand that.
I don't know. See, Georgia, South Carolina, you know, it's worse than Florida.
See, I grew up down there in Florida, Georgia, Alabama area. So, yeah, I know how that is.
Yeah, I lived down in Georgia for quite a few years, and glad I'm not down there anymore.
Of course, I
miss it like hell.
Of course, I spent like 7 years in New Hampshire. I spent 7 years in New Hampshire, and man, it's warm in the winter when it gets up into the single digits, above zero.
I went to Florida in August 2008, and yeah, it was quite hot. Also got a mosquito bite, so totally unexpected, but I ended up going on this trip to an island, and yeah. But anyway, not as hot as Sharm el Sheikh, from what I remember, in October 2005 in Egypt.
But that's a dry heat, man. This is a wet heat.
Yeah, it is the kind of heat you can cut with your knife.
I've been in Arizona in July.
Yeah, I've been in Death Valley in September, and August and September. I've been in freaking South Carolina and Georgia in August, and it's worse.
Dude, absolutely. I've actually taken that that saying, you know, fry an egg. I've actually taken an egg in August in Jacksonville, Florida, threw it on the sidewalk, and watched that thing cook in front of my eyes.
Oh, definitely.
We took an iron skillet one time and set it out in the on the carport and put an egg in it and fried it up one day.
I don't know. I usually fry my eggs in a pan on the stove, but hey, call me crazy.
I prefer the stove myself.
No, I just wanted to see if it really was true and it worked.
And we're back on food again.
Yep. It comes full circle.
Yeah,
that's what you get with a bunch of fat guys.
That's right. I made buffalo.
Who are you calling fat, dude?
Yeah.
I'm just talking about myself and Gorkon.
Yeah. I made buffalo chicken dip tonight.
I am just over 200 pounds, and that is 200 pounds of muscle, dude.
I'm just over 200 pounds myself, pushing 3.
I'm talking, I am 201, maybe 202, and it's all muscle.
Yeah, but you're only 4'1".
I'm 5'9".
I'm 275. Of course, I'm 6'5", so it don't look so bad.
Oh, that might work. I'm 6'3", and I'm about 250.
Oh, that's fine. I don't, you know. My doctor keeps on saying, you're not fat. You're just a large person, but you're not fat. I like him.
I got real broad shoulders. My wife don't seem to mind too much.
That's like saying, you're not fat, you're pleasantly plump.
No, that's what I tell her.
My wife keeps telling me she wants me to put on a little weight so she can feel better.
See, now, before we got married, my wife was pretty dead gum thin, and then I got to cooking with lard, and shit happened.
Lard.
That's almost as good as bacon.
In my wife's case, it was 2 kids.
Oh, speaking of which, my wife is 17 weeks exactly today.
Sweet!
Nice!
Hey, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much, y'all.
Today is in which day? The 31st December or 1st January? Also, welcome back, Ken. Did you get to sleep or something?
As in January 1st.
I have been in bed, yes.
Good for you.
Oh my goodness, is it real Ken Fallon?
It is.
No, it's the fake Ken Fallon. Be Jesus, good morning.
It's the fake Ken Fallon.
You guys must be well sauced up because I've been in here for an hour now.
Oh, dude, you have no idea.
Some of these guys.
Well, I don't drink anymore. I don't drink any less.
Well, I haven't drank in 3 years. Whatever. So.
Yeah. Ken, I started off this evening with a bottle of Jack Daniels, and it is gone, and I've moved on to 3 beers and my second bottle of Jack Daniels.
My opinion, the best thing about a bottle of Jack Daniels is when it's gone.
See, all these people with the booze, I tell you, you can never trust people that are a bit on the booze.
You ain't got no room to talk, dude.
Hey, what was it that Robin Williams said about Jack Daniels? I think he said if alcohol was the crutch, then Jack Daniels was the wheelchair.
That stuff is fairly rough now, in fairness.
Yeah, that never grew. I mean, if I want to suck on an oak tree, I'll pick up a stick.
Yeah.
It's like a chainsaw inside your mouth.
See, now, I love my Jack Daniels, but I love my moonshine much more.
A lot smoother.
Well, since I can't afford scotch, just give me rye.
You know, I've had a small jar of moonshine that I've been keeping in my fridge for about 3 or 4 years now.
Dude, you should drop a peach in that shit and let it sit in the sun on your windowsill for about 6 months and then eat the peach and throw away the shine.
Yeah, the shine ain't going to get any better.
Nope.
Well, this is really kind of odd stuff. It was actually made from sunflower, so it's kind of an unusual flavor to it.
See, now you don't understand, because moonshine is pure corn. You make it out that's...
No, I do understand. This stuff was actually made with sunflower. Don't ask me how or why exactly, but it was made with sunflower. You can actually taste it in the shine.
Well, I'm going to have to look that up, because we do raise sunflower. I don't, but I can always go in my neighbor's fields and knock a few down.
Why is probably they'd already had some shine.
Yeah.
Dude, I found out it is so illegal to make shine up here. It ain't even funny.
Yeah, I don't think I've talked to him. You can't make hard liquor in Kansas either.
In Georgia, you can make 3 gallons a year.
Yeah, I don't drink, but I never understood why. I never understood why moonshine was illegal.
Taxes, man. Taxes.
That's it. The government couldn't get their piece of it.
Even the old days, it wasn't illegal to make for your own consumption. It was illegal to sell.
Sick
that
flog.
And the fact that it ruins family.
Yeah, we scared her off.
No, I had to drag her back out because she's keying up. Does she need help? Yeah, probably.
Cooper can't find his way out of the room.
I tried to move down there, but it was moderated.
See, I wish I could participate in conversations about liquor and beer and moonshine, but I don't drink.
You're lost.
I have no perspective on the situation.
We could start.
It's like this, Neo Dragon. If you drink enough, then you really, really, really love dual window panes.
Hang on a minute. That would be split window panes, not dual window panes.
It was a test, Thistleweb, to see if you could resist, and you failed.
Yeah, I'm almost at the point of giving up for the evening, but I just wanted to make it clear, split window panes, not dual window panes.
Now, Pokey, if you're my age, you know what window pane was.
Yeah, I know what it was. I never experienced it myself, but that's okay. I don't think I mind that too much.
I missed out on that myself.
Yeah.
I'd just like you to know as well is that I was just about falling asleep there with the headphones on. And I heard that, it's like, dual window panes, fuck that, dual window panes, fucking split window panes. Immediately jump back on the button. It's like, split window panes, I want to clarify that, split window panes.
Split pane soup, huh?
I think Joel can tell us all about the old school window pane, can't you, Joel?
Maybe.
Well, you're so cagey about it.
I got window panes in my house, of course, but, you know, hey.
Am I missing something? Is there some kind of inside joke or entendre?
I bet you are.
Okay. All right, cool. Just asking.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad, Klaatu. I'm not sure I get it either.
No, it was an acid LSD.
Yeah, that's right. It was the way they made the acid.
Right.
Yay.
If I remember right, since I didn't do it, you licked it off of the window pane that you, it was the last part of manufacturing it. It ended up on a piece of glass, so you licked it off.
I thought they put it on paper.
Yeah, wasn't it on the, tattoos, like temporary tattoos?
Yeah, they did that, but there was a method of manufacturing it that used glass to crystallize the LSD.
I remember the funny postage stamps and stuff.
Well, it goes farther back than me. We're talking about the 60s. By the 70s, which is my era, it was powder. And then they would liquefy it and put it on stamps.
I was around in the 60s, but I was a grade schooler.
Well, Red, you and I are close to the same age, so...
Yeah, I'm 51.
I'm so square. I've never even seen acid. I don't think I've even ever seen anyone on acid.
Well, I grew up in Southern California, so I saw a lot of stuff.
Closest I ever came was one day. I was hanging out with some friends at a skate park down on the beach, and some dude came wandering up to me and says, "Hey, man, you know where the trips are at?" That's as close as I ever came to it.
It's pretty much invisible, so I hear the only way you can actually see it is under a black light, but I have no idea if that's true.
Shouldn't you be able to identify people on acid from all the fancy colors emanating from them or something?
I remember one time when I was down in Cincinnati, I saw a guy, and he literally looked purple.
Just one time in Cincinnati.
One time at band camp.
I went down there a few times.
By the way, hi, Ruji. Nice to meet you.
Don't mind us.
Yeah, Ruji, apparently you got your press key to talk worked out.
Oh, you're talking to me. Yeah, Ruji. I guess I did get it to work. Now there's an echo for some reason.
No, that's Sigflup.
Yeah, don't worry. She's on a tablet or something, so she might have some issues with communicating and whatnot. But we should all welcome her with big arms and wide open faces.
Have a hug, Sigflup.
Hey, I figured it out. It's an Android.
It's common to Android. Red can tell you about it. If you're on an Android device and you key at the same time somebody else does, you will repeat their signal as well.
Does it?
It's pretty rad that it runs on Android.
I'm going to put on a pair of headphones and see if that helps.
That will probably help a lot.
I was just going to ask if it would do it even with headphones.
Red, no, it works pretty good with the headphones.
Okay, cool.
I'm assuming you don't see the client list in every, or not the client list, but like the other people in the chat room on the Android app, or do you?
You do.
Yeah, I believe
you do see the other people, and you can see them queue up, but on my Android device, it's really hard to time when you queue up and when you queue down as far as when you're like push to talk, because there's no actual button to just press and hold.
She also may have a problem with Klaatu, because when I was listening on my phone, I didn't hear Klaatu. I knew somebody was talking, but I didn't hear or see him, so you may have a different codec or something.
Why are you singling me out?
Well, who doesn't have a problem?
He hates you, Klaatu.
And why is there a washing machine going on in the background?
Because he's got a laundromat.
To be honest with you, I heard you earlier in the day, but tonight when I was coming home, I couldn't hear you.
He heard us earlier and felt so dirty he had to wash his clothes. That's why.
That's not a laundromat. He's actually the roving reporter from platform 9 3/4. That's what it is.
Yeah, doing some laundry.
Tisselweb, you need to go to bed, my friend.
If you heard him on the way home, Red, that's because you're on your Android, and yeah, if you're on a different codec, you wouldn't hear somebody. Klaatu, are you on Celled or Speaks?
I'd have to look. I don't know off the top of my head. I'll check and get back to you.
How do you find that out?
It's in settings, like audio output or something. It tells you. Actually, here, audio input, audio Speaks is what I'm on.
Oh, yeah, wasn't there some issue? I didn't know it was still an issue, but that Android doesn't have Speaks installed, right?
Yeah, if you drag quality far enough to the left or to the right, you'll be on Celled, and if you drag it to the left, you'll be on Speaks.
Oh, isn't this the same issue we had last year?
No, this was an issue that we had last year. The big issue that we had last year was that the Slackware version of Mumble was compiled against the wrong version of Celt, so we didn't have any codecs we could use.
Oh, and Slackware is perfect, right?
Well, actually it is, but...
I saw you queue up, so Mumble's go not. Ahead.
Oh, no, I have nothing to say.
Yeah, but I love you anyways.
But you didn't echo.
Yes, that's a lot improved.
I'm on headphones now.
It's fantastic. I just love the sound of your voice. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say.
Just consider it the biggest internet crush you've ever had.
You don't have to say anything.
The two words you're looking for is a restraining order.
That's probably about right.
Thistleweb, you ought to consider ending on that high note.
You must stay at least 200 feet from this sea block.
You think? Yeah, I'm just at the point where I'm considering whether I should call it a night or not. Yeah, I'm just
call
considering
it a night, dude, the morning. Before you
it's
say official. Something stupid.
Go to bed. I always say something.
So 2 hours
stupid.
Ago?
Come on, yeah, I have heard Thistleweb way more messed up than this.
So have I.
50. I've heard you more way
the
messed up than this.
The last New Year's.
Tell me about instance. It.
You? Yes.
Yeah, I've had.
We have.
I've had Thistleweb quite a lot too.
Yeah, we have 5150, but nobody needs to.
But we do want to hear from Sigflop, because she's just pure awesome.
I have nothing to say. It turns out that I have no copy of Yes Please anymore. Like, on all my servers, on my personal email, like, I can't find a copy. So if one of you guys has a copy, if you can email it to me.
It's in it's on Cray in VAR members.
VAR members?
You wrote it, didn't
you?
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Git, the ultimate backup tool.
Sigflup, you wrote Yes Please, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. You tend to lose things, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Please.
It was the most piece of software that I've ever used and absolutely loved.
I'm thinking about updating it. I have some free time here, so I'm downloading it now.
No pressure, but that would be so cool, because, yeah, I've actually missed it a lot as well.
I have missed it so much.
Cartu, didn't you talk about the last time it was pointing at the wrong folder or something?
Oh, I don't know. I think what happened was there were two things that happened, like, really close together. And at one point, it was just some weird little thing that you could fix by doing a patch in the code, a quick sed command or something. But then at the, like, right after that, I updated the thing that was driving unixporn.com. That's a name drop. And then it broke Yes Please completely. So it was actually irreparable as it stood.
Go ahead, Ciclop.
I was just saying, that's interesting. I wonder what it was.
If I remember correctly, it was Klaatu switched servers from... He sent something over to from one server to another, like switches hosting. And then when he switches hosting, it switched the actual path to where the files were uploaded. And then after that, when he upgraded the software, then it broke everything.
Yeah, that sounds correct. That sounds right.
Hi, Mr. Gadget.
I mean, the hosting thing, the gallery or whatever it's called, Coppermine, I think, is obviously open source. So we could, if we need to dig around in the code and get more information for you, Sigflop, I'm sure I could do that for you if you tell me what to look for.
Okay,
I'm too drunk right now, but if you need to know anything, I'll be more than happy to dig for it.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, while we're kind of giving Klaatu the business, have you seen on DistroWatch Klaatu this new Slacks version, Agilea Linux, that claims to have dependency resolution in the package manager?
No, but I mean, what else is new? I mean, that's kind of like the whole thing about slap to get, right?
Yeah.
I know a little bit. I mean, I know that slackbuilds.org recently moved some flags that they did for listing requirements. I wonder if this is an offshoot of that, if someone is parsing that now and doing Slack build dependency resolution, or if it's just using slapped-get. I don't know. But yeah, I think that's not so unusual at this point.
I thought Slack builds removed their dependency listing.
No, they moved it to the .info file.
And I thought
it used to be in the README.
I thought Slacks was one of those live distros where you dropped in a special package and it would run it. So if it's Slacks and doing dependency resolution, it could just be doing full packages.
Yeah, true.
Lord D, your level's low again.
That is also true. I can confirm that.
I'm at work taking a slight break, and, well, unfortunately, the mobile client for Android, the volume levels blow.
But well, the sound quality is pretty stellar. Just fine.
Hey, Lord D, as far as Android goes, there's an app called Volume Plus that seems to work on any gingerbread version of Android and any ICS version of Android. But if you're into Jelly Bean, it doesn't work so well.
Yeah, I'm up on 4.2.1, CM10.1.
Yeah, I'm running latest and greatest CyanogenMod mod for the Nexus S, which is 4.2.1, I believe. And the Volume Plus thing does not work at all.
I just went from ice cream sandwich to jelly bean and too many problems.
It really depends on which phone you're running it on as to what problems you are and how you can fix them.
I'm running a Nexus S4G and I haven't quite gone up to Jelly Bean yet. I'm still running Ice Cream Sandwich.
When you do upgrade to Jelly Bean, you will notice a significant battery life increase.
Really? Interesting.
And one thing I've noticed, it also depends on if you're running a single core or a dual core. The previous phone I tried to run CM10 on was a Samsung Galaxy Captivate, and that was a goddamn nightmare, but CM9 ran perfectly on it.
Well, see, I'm running the Nexus S, and I don't have a problem at all. I'm running the latest nightly as of last night.
Yeah, see, I'm running the Nexus S 4G, which is a single core, so.
Yeah, I'm running a Motorola.
I'm jealous.
Well, it was cheaper than anything else. I'm with AT&T, and it was the cheapest phone with the same processor as the S3 and the HTC One, whatever it is.
Well, I bought one of the Nexus 4s, but the market around here was so profitable for it that I just sold it as soon as I bought it.
I'm so glad to be not running a Motorola anymore that I can't even tell you all.
Oh, man. I ran Motorola's, or my work phones for, I don't know, the last 10 years. And the company switched us out to some other phone, and it's a piece of crap. So I bought a Motorola for myself, and sometimes I wish I wouldn't.
I'm going to quickly interrupt here a second and say that I am wasted. I'm absolutely wasted. It's been a good evening to one and all, but I am going to call it a night. That's now 6:33. Think unless my eyes are deceiving me. 6:30.
Yes, that's right. 6:33 in the morning.
Yeah, in the morning. UK time.
Yeah, go dunk your head and swallow before you lay down.
Yeah.
So Swip, we love you, man, and split pains for the win.
Yeah, totally. Split pains for the win. Yeah, it's been a good evening and happy new year to one and all. I shall bid you adieu.
Happy New Year.
Take care.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for coming, man.
Good evening. I'm gone.
Hey, K5, what are you running now, by the way?
Galaxy S3.
Okay, so that leaves me as the only person left from the UK now, it seems.
Well, congratulations. I'd send you a cookie, but I don't have one to give you.
Apparently, you're the only person.
Go to my website and I'll give you a cookie.
I'm from the UK, but I'm in Croatia.
Apparently, you're the only one running Aegea as well.
Say that again. Somebody from the UK, but somewhere else, and then something else.
I'm from the UK, but I'm in Croatia.
Cheater.
And it looks like Zoke has run away as well.
And I'm from, I help out, community side really, but the Aegea project, the Aegea Linux distribution. And, I help with the quality assurance ISO testing a bit now, I will, for Aegea 3. And I've been to, I went to Potsdam last year now, it's 2012. Not for some of you, some of it still is. I'll go again soon, I think, and went to Old Camp and, yeah.
Hey, speaking of Aegea, have they added more to the repos? I tried it back when it was the first version of Aegea, and they didn't have a whole lot in the repos. Obviously, it was the first version, and I was just wondering how they were. And you know, had they incorporated a lot more things? Or how was that going?
Oh yeah, the repos were a bit lacking to begin with. It was like because when they forked from Mandriva, they put a lot of packages over, but there was certain stuff missing, and so they'll always be like, if this package is Mandriva and it's missing, go and report it as a bug, and we'll probably add it. But now it's, in general, I think it's more, there's more stuff in the repos, and it's also moved in its own direction more since Aegea 1, which actually became end of life on 1st December, saying that, 18 months of support. Aegea 2 is more in its own direction, KDE 4.8, GNOME 3, Aegea 1 has GNOME 2, and then Aegea 3 will be in March 20th, it was supposed to be, and yeah. So it's better than it was to begin with when it comes to repos, as far as I know.
Nice.
Well, Seb, I understand sort of exciting times from Aegea. You're going completely community supported, or am I thinking of Mandriva?
Yeah, that's right. Aegea is the one that went. It's all one cent community, because it was forked by former developers, Edge IT, Mandriva. I think it was sort of like three companies that made Mandriva, I think, and Edge IT was one of them. And that was like all the most of the European developers, most of the French developers, and they it became they got laid off and stuff like that. And so a group of them and volunteer contributors decided that they would fork Mandriva into what would be Magia. And then they were going to fork it off Mandriva 2010.2. And they realized if they did that, it would be a bit too old, the packages in it when it came out. So they did the developer's version, Cauldron, and then, I mean, Cooker for Mandriva, and then forked that. And yeah, so I made Magia 1. And yeah, it's all 1 cent community, and everyone is volunteer. Who it's all non-profit and all that. And I mean, I set up. I found that about early on. So like September 18th, the announcements of the fork, and I was there, and I thought, well, I'm going to start an IRC channel for the UK, hoping that it would become more popular and all that. And so did that. Next, I set up my Magia social channel on Freenode, right? And I had my IC presence, but I spent like a year just keeping an eye on it closely on the blog and on the mailing list and stuff like that before I decided, like, I'm going to actually get more involved with this more officially. And then I joined the documentation team, which I hadn't really contributed to, because I realized soon after it wasn't really, I said I would be on this team, it wasn't really for me that. But I went and joined the marketing team, the marketing communications team, and I became the, and I went to FOS them in Brussels, in Belgium, to meet some of the contributors and all that. I went and became the, I won the votes on the mailing list and became the deputy leader of the marketing team. And I was like, it was sort of thinking like, me, really? And so I had that position for a little while, and I went to a local event in May, and I went and I went and tried to promote it to my local, like the local area in this area, right? And there's a video on YouTube if anyone's interested of my 5-minute lightning talk about Magia, and it's just find it, Magia lightning talk. And first time proper public speaking, and I thought, and it was like really good. So I did that, had some people talking, came up to me, wanted to find out more. I went to Old Camp as well later, and I was going to do a talk there, but yeah. And
And can you say good morning, Brigara? I need some bacon and cabbage, please.
Who was that to?
It was Ken. Would you be Ken
Fallon Begora? I need some bacon and cabbage this morning. Hey.
Thank you, thank you.
I think we've established K5 is not the fake Ken Fallon.
I should hope not.
Now, something I heard about Mandriva was they were getting ready to rebase off of Magia. Is that something I misheard, or what's going on there?
Yeah, that's right. Mandriva, it was the whole idea that they wouldn't be around anymore and all that kind of thing. And so a guy from Lib Office who was involved with Charles something, he was involved with like promoting Lib Office. He joined Mandriva, so Mandriva they're not dead. I mean, apparently there was going to be Mandriva 2012 version, but I haven't seen that. But Moza, which is they kind of use Mandriva, a Russian company, and actually they these changes, if anyone's tried Mandriva 2011, the KDE changes, like the menu, the Rosa menu, that was Rosa. But so there's like Rosa, Mandriva, but Mandriva is more, well, yeah, they decided to base the server version on Magia. So they've got a server version which is based, I thought it was Magia 1, but apparently it's Magia 2. So they've got a server version based on that, and they're more focused on products now and confuse things a little bit more. What they're basically sort of deciding is, it seems, from what I've read on the blog anyway, is they're basically deciding that they're going to focus more on products or companies and stuff. So it could be like an education product, it could be whatever, and then the community would be renamed to like Open Mandriva possibly. It's all on the blog, it's all a bit unclear at the moment, but yeah, they're based on Mandriva for the server, Mandriva on the server, and as a result of this, their like main security guy, for example, he's now helping with the security team in Mandriva, so that's good. And another contributor who from Mandriva who does KDE, he's helping with Magia as well a bit, so that's good again. So yeah, there's that.
Well, Seb, I'd understood that the Rosa Desktop Edition was on Mandriva, but the Rosa server was actually based on Red Hat.
I'm not sure about that, but Rosa is, there was on the Mandriva blog, they I think a while ago, they actually had like a diagram explaining it better. And basically, it seems that Rosa, they've been sort of involved in Mandriva anyway. They take packages off Mandriva Cooker, the like development version, if you like, the rolling release, right? Mandriva's got Culver instead. So Rosa basically take packages off Mandriva's Cooker, which I think must be still being developed, even though there hasn't been an actual Mandriva release recently. I assume so anyway. And they basically base it on Mandriva. So yeah, there's Rosa, which is very similar. If you download, say, Mandriva 2011 or if it comes a later version, 2012 or whatever. Actually, I think there was a tech preview of the Rosa 2012 or the Mandriva 2012 or something. Anyway, if you download one of those and compare it against the other one, so Rosa and say Mandriva 2011, you'll see that they're very similar because of how they got the Rosa changes in there and things like that. And so also when you compare Magia to another distribution, and to be fair, you're supposed to kind of like compare it against Rosa, because that's about as close as you got at the moment to a distribution that's similar enough but different. And there was a good YouTube video that I saw saying that did this by some sort of Australian guy, and that was a good video, yeah.
Well, I played with and never got to the point of installing. Played with the live CD of Rosa a bit. The first desktop edition, they had some interesting ideas. Like right in the middle of the desktop, you'd have four desktop icons that might appeal to new users. You had like your internet and your office and blah blah blah, four icons right in the middle of the desktop with some of your major subdivisions of applications, and that was supposed to be, I think, their main draw. But the latest version that I saw posted distro watch looks like they'd left that part out from the screenshots.
I think they've got two versions. There was like one release, and then there was going to be one for more business, something like that. But I tried one out from the live CD. I think it came from Linux Magazine. But I tried something out anyway, a bit like that, and I thought, yeah, this is good. I mean, I don't know that much about Rosa, but I do actually know who, if I want to find out more about Rosa, I know exactly who to go to on IRC and talk to about it, and I met this guy at FOSDEM as well, and he was a guy who I think he wanted to like really continue with Mandriva, but he works for Rosa now anyway or whatever, but he's been involved with Mandriva and Rosa, and he's and so if I want to find out more about Rosa, I could just find this guy on IRC and start chatting to him about it, and I've done that before. Because actually, I should probably add here, I'm not a long-term Mandriva user. I didn't use Mandriva for many years, but I didn't go way back to the Mandrake days. I actually started off with Fedora Core 2 in 2004, and then offline, I had a wireless device, it couldn't go online. Fedora Core 4 again, and then eventually I got hardwired, and then somebody recommended Ubuntu, so I was on Ubuntu since second release quite happily until about until 2009, sort of like 9.04, GNOME 2 patching and so on, and I tried to move away back to Fedora, wouldn't install, and then I ended up on Mandriva. But I knew about Mandriva because of somebody I knew at college, UK college, a bit different from America, who would say how good it was at the time, and I would say how good a bunch was. I was 17, and you know, sort of there, the distribution I should try out. So I went and tried out, and then eventually I moved on. Went down DistroWatch in like 2009, went through loads of distributions in VirtualBox. Mandriva had some issues, but I ended up getting a development version working. That would be 29, that would be the 2010.0 release, the October 2009 release, and I really liked that. I know people on IRC who were using Mandriva, and then the whole stuff about that Mandriva was having problems and all that, I knew about that, still liked it, and then the announcement of Geo4 can sound from there, really.
Well, I tell you what, Seb, sometime I'd like an introduction to this guy you know from that's on the Rosa team, because I don't know if you ever listened to it on Kernel Panic Oddcast. Oh, not a month ago, we had a discussion on Rosa and whether they're positioned to become the Red Hat of Eastern Europe and the Russian space, because they're, you know, culturally linked in that area, that they, you know, they may have more of a better simpatico with the users. So, you know, if you wouldn't mind slipping me an address or something sometime, I'd like to set up an interview for KPO.
Possibly, yeah, if I have your details. But his accent is very, it's very French and so on. It can be a bit hard to understand, let's put it that way. But yeah, he's very knowledgeable, and he's very knowledgeable, and yeah.
So we've heard from Cornobiel about his distro, Crunchbang. We've heard from Seb about Magia. I happen to know that Reggie has a Arch-based distribution that she works on. Are you there, Reggie? Can you tell us about your distribution?
Oh, hey, thanks for the plug. Yeah, it's based on a webcomic that I made, or that I'm still making, I guess. And the distro is called SadOS, and it's just the webcomic's about, like, just a depressed guy and his adventures and stuff, and so his operating system is called SadOS because the operating system is sad, like he is. And I started it out based on Xubuntu.
Aww.
So I'm not really a fan of Ubuntu or Ubuntu-based distros, so the only reason that I started it out based on Xubuntu was that it was really easy to use the tool Remaster Sys for basically cloning an installation. And Remaster Sys is a really great tool, but it's only available for Ubuntu or Debian-based systems. And so eventually I found out about Arch ISO, which is a sort of a similar tool for Arch, to take a pre-existing distro or like your customized installation of an Arch Linux and turn it into a live CD. Except it's a little more difficult to use than Remaster Sys because it's command line scripts. And I had some trouble with it at first, but I eventually got the hang of it. And so I turned SadOS into an Arch-based distro. And I feel like I'm probably missing some important points here, but that's the gist of it.
Well, what's the goal of the distribution? Because I think the thing I heard you were saying, it was going to be like friendly to new users-ish. Like it had like some hacking tools in it and some art tools or something like that. Did that carry over into the Arch version?
Yeah, I used a lot of the same applications in the Xubuntu version as well as in the Arch version. Like especially fractal graphics tools, which I'm really into for some reason. So I installed like a whole bunch of those and just a lot of tools that I just personally like to use for security or for graphics mostly. I'm not that much of a security person, actually. Like, I'm interested in the topic, and so I did install a bunch of security applications that I haven't used before personally, but that I know are good. And as far as the goal of the distro goes, I mean, it was originally a promotional tool for my webcomic that I was selling on USB sticks at the Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco, which is a comics convention. It's an alternative comics convention. And yeah, so it started out as just a promotional tool, but I wanted to make it fun too. Like, and so I printed out a whole, like, a little bit of documentation for users to read and get some ideas for projects that they could do on the operating system.
That's pretty cool. How hard is this? I mean, like, to me, it sounds really complex to get something to install exactly how you want it to install. Like, how long do you think it took you, or whatever gauge you could use to give us an idea of how hard it is or easy?
It took me hours and hours and hours. So I think it probably took like a week of pretty much nonstop work to get the Arch version going. The Xubuntu version was a lot easier because I just like went ahead and customized the distro and then ran remaster sys, and then it just worked with with Arch ISO. It didn't just work. So I had to, you know, jump through a bunch of hurdles, and eventually I got a success message when I ran the command in the terminal, and I was like, yes. But it was frustrating.
What's the workflow like? Do you have to like sort of install Arch on a clean partition or something, and then you kind of clone that, or you just pull certain packages down and sort of like wrap that into an ISO or something? Is which of those or both?
Well, there's two different workflows you can use in Arch ISO. One is called Relang. I don't know if I'm even pronouncing that right. And the other one, I don't remember what it's called, but Relang is the one that I used, because that's the one where you can copy your existing installation basically into a new one. And let me think for a sec. I totally just lost my train of thought because I'm on the spot.
Oh, you were talking about the two different methods of making the distribution, either copying what you have installed or something else, Relang.
Right, yeah. Wait, what was the question again? What's the workflow?
I was just curious. Yeah, I was just curious how you go about it. Like, where do you even start?
Okay, well, you start by... Oh, right, now I remember what I was going to say. I installed it in VirtualBox. So, like, you can start from an Arch installation that's on your hardware, but I don't have Arch on my hardware, so I just figured it'd be easier to do it in VirtualBox. So I ran through the installation, and then I did what I wanted to the distro. Like, I installed the packages that I wanted. I changed the desktop. I added a desktop environment for one thing, and then I customized it. I changed the theme, stuff like that. And then... downloaded the Arch ISO scripts, and so there's a few things you have to do to prepare before actually running the Arch ISO command, which is what is it? I think it's make Arch ISO. I don't quite remember what the command was. I sort of just did this in this like flurry of a lot of intense time spent on it at once, but I don't necessarily remember all the specifics of it. But
that's what bash history is for, right?
Yeah, totally. So, let's see, what else was there? I guess I had to copy... Oh, so you make a like an overlay, basically, for the new ISO. So you create a directory for the build, and then you create a directory that is going to be mirrored on the new ISO that you're creating. And in that directory, you can... it's almost like a cheroot or something.
Okay.
It used to use Chroot, but not anymore. But you add files from like, you know, like configuration files of any sort. You can add them to /etc/skel, and then they stay, or they're preserved when you create the new ISO. And so after you copy over a bunch of files, then you run the make arch ISO command, and then it generates an ISO based on that. And you can also, there's a package list file that you can also edit. It's just a straight up list of packages. You can edit it by hand, or you can generate it from the packages you already have installed. So I'm not sure what else to say about that.
It sounds cool. I mean, it sounds like it's definitely not trivial. That's really cool that you figured all that stuff out. I guess the obligatory question would be, where can people find it?
Let's see. Well, there's a whole section on the Arch Wiki about Arch ISO.
No, I mean your distribution.
Your distro.
Okay, it's on SourceForge. It's I think if you Google SADOS, like SADOS SourceForge, you can find it, or sourceforge.net/projects/SADOS. It's not mature by any means, though, so be warned.
Don't say that. Just tell them it's perfect and let them find the bugs themselves.
Okay, yeah, anyone's free to, you know, report bugs and stuff.
Don't worry, anybody using Arch is going to be immature anyway.
I got a quick question. I'm curious, you said you designed this as a mostly originally as a promotional tool. I'm curious, I've never heard of a Respin being built as a promotional tool before. What was the idea behind that?
I guess it's kind of a weird idea now that I think about it. But since I'm into Linux and I have a webcomic, I put a lot of Linux references in my webcomic. And so like SADOS, the operating system, is kind of a big running theme in it. And I just felt like geeking out one day, and I wanted to, I was trying to come up with like ideas for different things I could sell at the comic convention, where I was also selling my books, and USB sticks with the operating system were just, that was just one of the ideas that I came up with. And I thought that would be really cool, and I wasn't sure how that would go, if anyone would actually buy them or not. But I just decided to give it a go, so I bought like 5 USB sticks from, I think, Amazon or something for pretty cheap. And I installed SADOS on all of them, and I actually sold all 5, which I felt was like a pretty big accomplishment. But I guess the motivation behind making it a promotional tool was just a random geekiness, pretty much.
And this wasn't even like at a geeky conference, right? This is like a comic. Well, I guess a comic convention's probably got a crossover audience.
Oh, that, yeah, I was expecting really there to be a crossover audience, for sure.
And actually, if you Google it, SADOS on sourceforge.net is like the third link.
You need SEO, Reggie.
Hey, guys, I don't mean to interrupt, but since it's now midnight in the Mountain Time Zone and the USA and Canada, Happy New Year's to those folks.
Happy New Year!
Did somebody just say Happy New Year's ass?
Happy New Year to you, too.
It's totally not Mountain Time.
No, as is an azimuth.
Say it again, not Mountain Time? Did I get that wrong?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm drunk.
Mountain Time is correct.
Can I just ask a question about SADOS? How do you go about making an operating system sad? That came out like
facetious, but
I want to, I'd like to know what
you have to
want.
Include lib depression and lib depression devel.
That's great.
Yeah, but that's been forked by Ubuntu, and it's now something else.
Thanks, Klaatu, for the answer. I couldn't think of anything witty, so that's good.
Yeah, cool. And Klaatu, when it starts up, it doesn't play the Ubuntu drums. It plays blues.
Oh, nice.
And just be real careful about including anything like a LibRaiser. Just a bad idea.
Oh, well, and I thought I had some like speaking
nobody
voice.
Nobody knows.
Hey, Richard, well, does it run Razer QT?
SADOS?
Yes, ma'am, SADOS.
Runs XFCE.
Sweet!
Well, I thought it would have a voice that sounded like Marvin the Paranoid Android.
It has a voice that goes like, "Welcome to SADOS," except with a lot of effects applied. That's the startup sound.
Nice.
Is there a connection between SADOS and GLADOS from Portal?
No, I did not know about GLADOS until after I made SADOS, and a couple of people pointed out the Portal thing, and I was like, whoa, and that's cool, that's funny. So yeah.
Yeah, it seems like between Portal, I mean, you're sort of the antithesis of GLADOS and Portal, and actually the Marvin the Paranoid Android I hadn't even thought of. So but between those two, you're in pretty good company, I think.
Sweet.
There was a package that if you entered something incorrectly in the... It's the insult package or something that you can install on Debian, that if you enter commands correctly, it insults you.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that Etsy Skel directory you're talking about, that I've recently learned about that, and that is a really interesting setup.
Yeah, I don't know that much about it, but I think it seems like a pretty convenient way to customize a distro, and I've seen it in Remaster Sys as well.
What is it based? Does it just sort of lay out the defaults for config files or something?
Yeah, it's all the default config files get copied into a user's home directory when their account is created on the system.
That's okay. I've got one for you. Suicide Linux. It's actually an app you can install on any Debian based distro, and I think they may even have RPM versions of it as well.
What it does is,
if you enter a command, if you do not enter it 100% syntactically correct the first time, it wipes your root file system.
I totally knew that's what you're gonna say.
It's a good test for admins. That should be the interview right there.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, ouch.
So does this application actually have, like, a lot of people downloading it and using it?
I have no idea. But I know there's a YouTube video. You can actually watch it in action on YouTube. You just go to YouTube and do a search for
Suicide
Linux.
No, that's cheating. That's called cheating, NeoDragon is the term for that. You have to download it and install it and live with it.
Yeah, move all your kids' photos onto your PC for a
second. Yeah.
And delete all the backups everywhere else.
Well, see, there's one problem. Well, actually, you know what? I could probably find the source code for it and install it on Gentoo.
You're going to learn how to use it the hard way.
So, yeah, it would still work.
So, who here is on Gentoo?
Me.
I'm on Savvy.
Me too. Oh, Savvy, and I use that on one of my computers, too.
Cobra 2 is on Gentoo, but he's maybe not
so you
lucid
use Gentoo,
right now.
Ruji?
What?
I'm on an Archbox right now.
So you use Gentoo, Ruji?
Yeah, I do.
How long have
I'm
you been using
guess
it?
What right now?
I've been using Savion for, like, maybe 2 years or something, and Gentoo for a little less than a year. And I installed it myself for the first time, like, just a few months ago, actually.
Sabio and I found out about a few years ago, and I knew somebody who was really into it on IRC before, and I went to the channel, and I mentioned Sabio on here, actually. Anyway, I hide out from a live CD or whatever, or into a virtual scene or something. The music, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's really good. But, yeah, Sabio is... So what's sort of one of those distros? It's there. I mean, if you're into Gentoo, you probably know about it. If you're not, then you might know about it. But it's there, but it's not really that known. It's got a lot on the live DVD, as far as I know. I think it's got codecs and all that as well. But like Mint, but based on Gentoo, I think.
Yeah, I think
well, actually, it's not just based on Gentoo. The two are basically 100% compatible. You can take Gentoo, and there's a specific how-to in the Gentoo wiki to basically build it up into Savion. And conversely, you can take Savion and strip it down into a base Gentoo install.
I've never quite understood how to mix echo and emerge, and I know you're not supposed to do that unless you really know what you're doing, but for various reasons I've wanted to use echo and emerge, and yeah, it always ends up turning into a mess.
Well, typically you use one or the other. It's not really a good idea to use both.
I didn't know that much about it, but Gentoo, you know, it's the idea, it's all complicated, it takes ages to install and all that, you've got to set this up, you've got to set that up and all that. That's the idea, the general idea. I don't know much about Gentoo at all, really. But Savion is, I think, if my understanding is correct, is basically somebody sort of made their own Gentoo in a way, where they set things up, and then they then basically released it as Savion. Is that right? If my understanding is correct?
Yeah, they basically just went ahead and did the extra steps and put it together into a nice install disk, added a graphical package manager onto it, and just made it basically ready to go out of the box, whereas Gentoo, you have to set everything up manually.
So they turned it into the same as all the other distros.
Yeah, basically. It's just Gentoo made... easier.
Well, basically, it's they took the source repositories from Gentoo and actually built binary versions of them and actually basically give you a binary build distribution instead of having to use the source build version from Gentoo. Now, the thing with Emerge versus Equo, you can mix the two, but you do have to be very careful and do it in a very limited case. For example, at one point, Emacs wasn't up to date in the Savion repos, so I actually went ahead and pulled them from the Gentoo repos using Emerge.
Yeah,
but
see, that's
I
the nice
limited
thing.
It to only that package, because if you mix things across, like if you mix libraries and stuff, you can have problems because of the date and timestamps on the binary packages versus the repositories from Gentoo.
Yeah, see, that's the nice thing. If there happens to be one or two packages that you can't find in the Savion repos, you can still install using Emerge from source from the Gentoo repos.
My problem is I've never been able to get Gentoo to work. I always craps out on something.
Really? That's kind of a funny problem. I would almost be willing to bet that it's your kernel compilation.
Or some way you've set up either Xorg or some other, you know, boot package. Because I found, and now I have had issues in the past, but I have found after doing a little research and reading through the wiki and the forums, it's usually something I did to screw it up.
Oh, I'm sure it's something I've done, but, you know, I'll take Arch from the beginning and make everything work. You know, it's not the same, but as Gentoo, in essence, it is. You know, you're doing it at the command line.
Well, the best equivalent is Arch is binary Gentoo. So if you can get Arch to work, you should be able to get Gentoo to work. The only difference is you have to actually go in and manually configure your kernel. And once you get your actual kernel up and running, steal the configuration from the Arch kernel and build your kernel based on that, and then run with Gentoo.
Once you get the kernel configuration out of the way, even with Xorg, it's just a matter of, not even anymore. It used to be, you still had to manually configure Xorg, but nowadays, Xorg, you know, the latest versions of Xorg, if you've got, as long as your video card is supported, in 99.99999% of the time, you just install Xorg and you don't even have to mess with the Xorg.config. It just auto detects everything and gives you all the best settings right out of the box. So,
sounds like Fedora.
Crazy thing about the Xorg auto configuration is that that's something that I can remember being developed within the time that I've been using Linux, which is weird to me. It seems like
I know, right?
Yeah.
Clutchy, how long have you actually been on Linux?
I think it must be... It's as long as I've had my GNU World Order Ogcast, so like whatever that's been. I'm guessing 7 years, maybe?
I've been on Linux. Now, I've been on Gentoo for almost 4.5 years now. I've been on Linux, and this will probably date me. There might be a few people in here who can date me before that. But my first attempt at installing Linux was Red Hat 6, the original Red Hat 6.
Yeah, mine was Red Hat 4.2. Oh, eat it!
I knew there was a few people in here who could probably date me, but not too many.
Sigflop, you're not even a Linux user anymore. You're a NetBSD person with your ugly OpenBox desktop.
No, actually, I installed Debian on my main lappy the other day because I couldn't get X working on OpenBSD on my Toughbook for whatever reason. I just could not figure it out. So I installed Debian, and
wow,
I'm happy.
Really?
Yeah.
On a Toughbook?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
And actually, you're still using Window Maker, aren't you, Sigflup?
I've never really used Window Maker. I'm using...
So that was TWM or something, wasn't it? Come on.
FVWM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, back
then...
Oh,
my, I remember that.
Hey, I remember last year at OLF, one of the guys that gave the presentation on the Tickle programming language, TCL programming language, when he was giving his presentation, I noticed the god-awful pink window borders and taskbar, and I asked him, is he running FVWM? And he said, yes.
Yeah, the default theme is horrible, in my opinion. I always change it.
Well, Reggie, how long have you been on Linux?
Well, there's a lull. I would like to
think like 4 years.
I would like to welcome the silver-tongued Buyer Brown into the channel.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, my
Hello,
man?
Hello, Buyer Brown.
Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Happy New Year, man.
HBR is rolling along, man. I've been listening on and off as I was going on, you know, throughout the weekend.
But yeah, anyway, back to what I was saying. When I installed, the first time I installed Red Hat 6, you could not get it up and running without manually configuring XORT. There was no auto-config. There was no nothing. You had to go in and manually configure XORT before you could get a desktop, period.
Well, I can scare
remember
some
when there wasn't
here.
A desktop. Yeah. I think I actually bought the first box of Mandrake.
Nice.
I could scare some people here because I actually had a set of InfoMagic CDs. That was actually one of my first versions, which, you know, the Soft Landing Solutions InfoMagic CDs, where they took Red Hat and several different distros like Slackware and that, and put them all on one set of CDs.
This was 3.5-inch floppies.
I was going to say, when I was back in high school, before I graduated from high school, a friend of mine, I went over to his house. That was when I was first introduced to Linux. His dad was running one of the first two versions of Red Hat at the time. And he had sitting on his desk, it was something like 30, 32, something like that. Floppy disks was the original install disk for whatever version of Red Hat he was running. It was either 1 or 2.
So what did you do after that, Red?
Okay, my InfoMagic CDs were from 1995.
Anyone in here run BIOS ever? BOS?
Yes.
I did once a while back.
Heard of Haiku?
Yes, actually. I was quite interested in that one. I just haven't had a chance to ever actually try it out.
Okay, on the InfoMagic CDs, real quick. Slackware 3.0, Red Hat 2.1, Debian 1.0.
Yeah, looks like you date us.
Nice!
Yeah, BIOS, or whatever it's called. Yeah, that was supposed to be like an old popular one or whatever, and then Haiku OS, whatever it's called, is there was, I mean, again, somebody I know on IRC, he's into Linux, but he would always go on about this Haiku OS, I might be saying it wrong, and how great it was and all that, and even in alpha or the beta, it was, and you can see on the site and stuff, and it was just like quite feature complete, and it could do quite a lot apparently. And I'm thinking this is quite a while ago when he started saying this stuff, so I assume now it's probably improved quite a bit since then, actually. But again, it's one of those distributions that operating systems. It's not a Linux. Anyway, it's more an operating system that I would want to try out in a virtual box at least, I expect, at some stage. I just haven't done it yet.
Well, did anybody ever run Unix on a desktop?
Not on a desktop.
Well, I can say yes to that, because back when I first started into Linux, one of the companies that I went to work for was running SCO-Unix. And so to learn the system, I actually installed it on a desktop workstation and played around with it. Yeah.
What part of Unix was you running, Neo Dragon?
A computer that had it.
Wait,
on
what?
It.
Say that again?
What part of Unix was you running, Neo Dragon?
It was SCO Unix 5.
What were you
I
doing
think
with
I'm
it?
A bit too young to have run Unix on the computers. Unless I decided to run BSD, I mean, that counts as
SCO
Unix, doesn't it?
It was SCO Unix 5. It came with the CDE desktop environment and had early KDE 1 point whatever apps that you could add in from the CD.
And your love for it? Yes, no?
Well, it was definitely a rock solid system. I can definitely tell you that. But as far as for the company that you know, created SCO Unix, yeah, there's not a whole lot of love there because they're the ones that are still trying to throw lawsuits at companies like Novell and such for supposedly infringing on the Unix copyright. Anyway, it's a big long story. You've probably heard about it.
Yeah, you don't feel like they have any ground?
I don't know. SCO wasn't the first company to ever come out with a version of Unix, so I don't think they have any ground.
Who said no?
Besides that, Novell actually bought the rights to Unix. So,
well, okay,
we can't hear
Sand Chaser. You say no?
Well, I was going to explain. Was first, let's go back up here. The company that developed SCO Unix was actually the Santa Cruz operation. That is not the same as the SCO company that started all the lawsuits. It actually changed hands several times, and it was a whole different set of management and ownership that started all that stuff.
That now, is Santa Cruz, California?
Yeah.
And in fact, the Santa Cruz company that created the original version of SCO Unix, they were actually backed by Microsoft.
Really?
Now the other thing, the company that actually started the lawsuits that basically became SCO was actually Caldera. And much to my shame, I actually had a copy of Open Linux Base 1.1 from 1997.
Buyer.
If you were to go and install SCO versions 3, 4, and 5, when you pop in the install disk and it comes up the boot screen, you know, it comes across SCO version whatever, 3, 4, or 5, and it says copyright Santa Cruz, blah, 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 blah. And right below that, it says copyright Microsoft.
Oh, really? Sand Chaser, you said to your shame. Explain.
Well, basically, Caldera was the company that ended up started turning around and suing everybody. That was the company that actually bought out SCO or Santa Cruz operation and then turned around and started suing everybody.
Yeah, it wasn't the original company. It was...
And Neil,
Caldera was the original company.
Because backed by Microsoft, it was...
Say that again?
Because backed by Microsoft, it had no value, or what are you saying?
No. All I'm saying is the later company that took over it, they started throwing around those lawsuits, so there's no love there. The original company that started SCO, I have no qualms with them. I mean, like I said, SCO Unix itself is awesome. It's rock solid. Never had any problems with it. Some of the clients that we supported with SCO Unix had been running it for 12 years without issue.
Sand Chaser, your rebuttal?
No, there's no rebuttal. There's no debate here at all.
Oh, yeah, no debate. I was completely agreeing with...
I mean, Linux is not Unix. GNU is not Unix. By definition, it's not. Nobody took SCO's code and created Linux from it.
And even if they did, they SCO released it under the GPL, so what was the problem?
Yeah, Linux is, Unix-like, as you know, as they say, or we say. And then DNU is, it's the same thing, and Herd would have been what we would probably all be using right now, really, if almost to us, if Linux hadn't come along, really. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, go on.
No, you go, bro.
I was just going to say, around 2003 or 2004, my freshman year at college, I took a computer science course, and we were running some version of Unix on our computers in the computer lab, and I didn't know the first thing about Unix at the time, so I don't remember anything about the desktop environment or anything, but I was just wondering if anyone here knows, like, what version of Unix might have been used on college campuses at that time.
Well, it could have been Novell. Maybe Novell.
Solaris.
It could have been Solaris. Solaris was very popular on college campuses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably was. It was very popular for, like, engineering and stuff like that. So...
In fact, the college that I finished my associate's degree at, Mount Wachusett Community College, for the longest time they ran Solaris servers until about 2004, 2005-ish. They switched all of the Solaris servers over to OpenSUSE.
Well, I remember we first got Unix at K-State back in the 80s, mid-80s, and I'm pretty sure it was AT&T version, and I don't know if they actually got the digital code files or if they actually got printouts and had to enter everything from scratch. I kind of get the impression that they got the printouts from another college and spent like a weekend just typing everything in by hand.
They might have used cards.
Maybe.
Did any of you guys ever program with punch cards?
Yes, sir.
I missed that
COBOL, my friend. COBOL in 1975.
Yep. With that, yeah, fellas, I'm going to drop off. Have you a good New Year, Happy New Year, and good night.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I was going to say, I was born in 1978, so the earliest thing I ever dealt with were the 5 1/4-inch floppies.
Did any of you punch card guys ever take somebody's program and shuffle the last 4 or 5 cards?
Oh, you're nasty.
That's horrible. But somebody did it to me.
Oh, that is just mean.
We used to program CNC machines with those. And the trick was always to shuffle the last few cards. Just after you spend 4 hours machining something and then boom.
Well, we had a guy in one of my earliest programming courses that I took back in college. We had a guy, he was probably in his, I want to say, late 60s. And he was going back to college just because he wanted to update his knowledge. And he told this story about how back when he was programming, it was on computers that took up, you know, an entire auditorium, and you had to walk along and flip the switch on and off for each, you know, bit, you know. And the programs that he was doing were missile trajectory programs that the military was testing out. He was saying how he was completely finished with one version of this at one point, and he was running across the hall with his notes. He had written down everything, and he had, I mean, this wasn't punch cards, obviously, but he had written down everything on several sheets of paper, running across the hall, he bumped into one of his colleagues. All his notes went all over the floor, and his colleague picked it up and gave it up to him. He just ran off, not thinking anything. He got there, entered what he read off of the sheet, and it was completely wrong. Didn't work the first time until he realized. He sat down, shuffled it around, and figured out that he had it in the wrong order. So I can completely understand that. Not the same as punch cards, but pretty bad. Especially when you have to do every single bit up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down.
Well, as long as he didn't nuke Czechoslovakia or something.
Right? Fortunately, it was just, you know, a test program, so no missiles were fired.
Yeah, the last program I wrote in that class in high school, that was in high school, the program played music on an AM radio that you sat on top of the computer. And the instructor thought that was the neatest thing he'd ever seen.
What did he say about sitting on a computer?
You take and put an AM radio, you know, a little pocket AM radio, and set it on top of the processor. Now, this processor was an NCR-100, which was about the size of a chest freezer, and which is the equivalent of about half of what's on your phone. And it would play music because of the circuits within it the switching, the different binary switching, it would play, you can make it play music. And I read an article and figured out how to make it send a signal that would be a higher note, lower note, and I made it play, if I remember right, it was something like Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Why didn't you choose Daisy?
Wow, cool. Because Mary Had a Little Lamb was the first one used by Alexandra Graham Bell, surely.
Yeah, but Daisy, come on, Hal sings it.
Was Hal even, was that movie even made back then?
No.
Oh, when was
it? Oh, yes, yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah, so why didn't you use Daisy Daisy?
That's too long ago, Ken, and too many bears ago.
Okay, the next time you tell this story, I want it modified so you played Daisy Daisy. Never let the truth stand in the way of a good story, my friends.
That's still a pretty geeky story, I gotta tell you. Of course, now they have scripts that you can if you hook up enough floppy disk drives, you can have it play different types of music using the frequency at which the floppy disk drive motor is moving. You guys ever seen that on YouTube?
Yep. Star Wars or something like that.
They do the Imperial March. There's one for like the theme song to Mortal Kombat. Somebody
did Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, Phantom of the Opera, Ghostbusters, you name it, it's up there.
I'm more impressed by the one where the quadcopters come in and play instruments.
I was always a fan of Back to the Future done by Ark Attack.
So which is the next countries to go?
I think it's California.
USA. Yes, I think it is.
Yeah, we completely blew off Mountain Time, didn't we?
No, we had that.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we still have California.
Yeah,
and then
next.
And then Alaska.
California, here we come.
I might make California, but that's about as far as I will make it.
Well, I'm going to be here all night because I'm working... and so
wait, where are you from, KT, K, whatever your name is, John? Yeah.
I'm in South Carolina.
Yeah, I should have read your name properly, sorry about that.
That's all right. But I heard the start of it, and I worked my normal 9 hours, and I'm old. I can't hang as good as some of y'all can.
I've been to bed. Have no fear.
I slept earlier yesterday. But yeah,
it's amazing that there's no like Java or sorry, not Java, HTML5 or something that's tracking the time zones as they go across the world. You would imagine that with all the Google gizmos and stuff, Google Doodles that they do, that they would have done that one, that this is the time now, and the next one up is this, and the next one up is that.
Yeah, I tried real hard. Ken, you got my email that we could map the followers of Henry Patrick Riley, but I don't know if that would make more people mad than what it was worth.
You could map them? Sorry, no, I didn't get the email. What did you say?
I sent that to you and Pokey a week ago. I talked about there was the Google IMAP or its IMAP project or whatever. I was going to rent that, and then I found out that there was a site out there that would. I couldn't do it because I'm not don't have the Henry Patrick Riley, but you could map all the followers from if they provided, of course, their real addresses.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that HPR would be central to HPR's vision, mapping its followers.
Is it really only two Europeans here? So Ken and myself, and then is everyone else from America now?
Dude Man is probably out milking the cows as we speak.
Oh, no, not hardly. We've several, lot of people from Europe and Australia,
Yeah, I know, but I sort of meant in sort of at the moment, last hour, if you like, or whatever, or half hour, if you want.
There'll be more coming online shortly.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Coffee won't keep me up so long.
Happy New Year, everybody, and then run downstairs to talk to strangers on the internet.
Say that again.
They'll all wake up and go, Happy New Year, everybody, and then run downstairs to talk to strangers on the internet.
Oh, we're not strangers.
Yeah, weird, doesn't it?
We're just strange.
But a woot.
Oh, man.
I can't argue.
I can't now, make coffee, folks, because if I do, I wake everybody up.
I want to know how much of a booze crisis Thistleweb has caused by, you know, being up and as drunk as he was.
Oh, man, he wasn't a patch on what how drunk he was last year. Come on.
He was pretty pretty tame tonight.
Pretty loosened, too. Lucid.
But I thought Pokey was going to boot him. I thought Pokey was going to boot him, but I don't think Pokey had the heart.
It wouldn't have been the same without Thistleweb, I'm sure. I mean, this is my first time, but I've listened to Thistleweb in Tech Bites when he used to do that, and then Krivins, I went on an episode with him as well. I should have probably mentioned Doom, Magia's special one. So yeah, I know what Thistleweb is like, but I tend to agree with his stuff, actually, that he doesn't say in those things, but I'm talking about Linux here. But yeah, it wouldn't have been the same on this without him, probably.
Oh, heavens, no, it wouldn't have been.
Hey, 50, how many times did you pass out in that last show we recorded? Twice?
Could possibly be.
I think it was two or three times.
I don't think it was quite that bad, but I jumped in at the end and did my thing. I don't know if... I don't know if I took too much time. Spork said, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good review, and then I took advantage of it.
No, I'm talking... The Spork wasn't even there. He must have passed out more than I thought.
Well, I mean, the last actual recorded show. Do you mean last Friday? Because that wasn't a show.
Yeah, I'm talking... Well, he was recording it to play it to... I think he was going to put it on HPR. I'm not sure.
The impromptu show. Yeah, who knows?
It was twice for sure, maybe three times.
I didn't know. I didn't do much better last Saturday either. We were, just hanging out in the KPO channel. We didn't record. Well, it was recording for a while, but I don't think anything's ever going to come of it. But I was kind of lit before we started because I was sitting around watching a movie and I came home and said, oh, I'm going to eat dinner. Well, I'll start the movie first and, well, I'll open a beer first. And I opened another beer and another beer and I was okay when we started, but it was like, it didn't take too long after we started, even though I did eat dinner, that I was like, oh, man, well, I'll just lay down here for... a couple minutes, nobody will notice, and man, I was gone.
Wanted to show that our brother across the sea wasn't exactly the only one around here that drinks a little bit.
No, I've heard a few intoxicated podcasters.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been keeping up pretty steady this evening, but if you guys aren't complaining, I guess I can't be doing too bad.
I don't know if we want to go through all the inebriated podcasters, especially over the last few months.
I'm inebriated, just throwing that out there.
Sweet.
And we're getting a lot of quiet bits.
Or I would be.
I'm just high on life.
Well, I'll throw out there. I'm going to attempt to make it to the end of the podcast, but no promises.
Well, it's in, 4 hours and a bit, the end. So, yeah.
Is this whole thing going to be released as a podcast on HPR?
Yes.
Apparently, there's something about how it would be in 3-hour episodes this week and next week. So the whole thing, yeah.
I think, Ken, his original idea is 1 hour at a time.
No. That'd be 24 episodes. That would be a whole month's worth of shows. Actually, well, more than a whole month. That'd be like 5 weeks.
So you're going to put it out all in one big chunk?
No, it'll be 3-hour chunks. So
you didn't hear that part.
Yeah.
It'll be whatever I feel like.
Control freak.
Yeah, really.
No, Liz freak. Whatever doesn't crash Audacity.
Comes to the end of the month, there's no new shows in the queue. We'll be 15 minutes at a time.
Five.
Did someone say something about crashing Audacity?
Yeah.
Cat. Have you had Audacity crash on you while you were making podcasts before?
Usually not unless I'm doing something weird like with multitracks. But these are going to be 2 gigabyte files, so.
I wonder if the multitracks explains it.
That's not that down. Weird though. That shouldn't matter. Or you mean multi-track recording or something?
Yeah, when I'm doing say 8, 9, 10 multi-tracks on the thing, just moving them around and stuff.
I've had that many, and it's fine. That's not weird.
Still,
it's got to be something else. Too,
consistently.
I've had it go down on.
Go ahead.
There we go. I've had it go down on me on a P4, just me recording.
Yeah, I've been having these mysterious crash instances, and it's usually like because when you start, when you stop recording and then start again, it automatically starts a new track. So I wonder if that's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's what always does it to me. If I have to hesitate in the middle, if I did all the way through on the P4, I think it was okay. But if I stopped and restarted, boom, I'd bring it down.
You guys need to stop by the Slacker Media showroom, and I can set you guys up with a machine that'll just keep recording and recording and recording. It'd be like magic.
What's the showroom?
It's my brick and mortar store. It doesn't exist.
It's in some hallway in some company's
Yeah, it's in the hallway.
It's in a stairwell somewhere.
Yeah. It's me and a laptop in a stairwell.
Or maybe that's locker room.
That's why the machines out of the lab keep disappearing.
Yeah.
It's those dang kids, man. They're sneaking out with them in the middle of the night.
Reggie, did you check your temp directory? Because some people were talking earlier about they realized that their Audacity crashes were basically tied to the fact that their /TMP was filling up.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. No, I didn't check it because it was then that I realized that I needed to upgrade Audacity. So I've since upgraded it to 2.02, I believe, whichever version you are running. And I haven't used it to make a podcast since, so I'm not sure if the issue would be replicated or not.
That will be interesting to find out. Let me know.
Will do.
Not that I care about your Sabayon distro.
Yeah, I still got to come up with another podcast to even make, and then I'll make it, and then I'll let you know if it crashes.
Perfect.
And you'll submit the podcast to HPR.
Yeah, I could submit my podcast on SatOS to HPR. That one's a fairly decent one.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Can you paste your RSS, your website RSS into the Mumble chat, please?
Sorry?
Can you paste your podcast details into the Mumble chat, please, just so we have them?
Oh, yeah, sure, just a sec.
The Mumble chat is passing for show notes.
You can just read it, and we'll write it down.
No, we won't. Paste it into the chat, and then I can copy and paste into the show notes.
Control freak.
No, I like show notes, Klaatu, unlike some people here. Points.
Hey, I'm getting very good at show notes for my show.
Yes, for your show.
There you go. All the links are in the show in the Mumble chat area.
Thanks very much, Chaser.
Hey, Klaatu, I don't know if you ever caught my suggestion, but what about just putting up a wiki for your old show notes and letting your 4 users contribute to that, or your 4 listeners contribute to it?
My 4 listeners are lazy. They won't ever do it.
Hey, I got speech to text. That's all I do. I just run it through that when I need something.
Do you really?
Are you kidding?
No, I ain't kidding.
Wow, that's interesting.
Works sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't.
I can't type worth a hill of beans.
Test?
No, it's just me.
It's like you're echoing through Red Dwarf Droid.
Is it me?
He must not. He's got to be on voice activated, and his speakers are setting off his microphone.
I'm using the droid. That's why I didn't plug the earphones back in. I said I resemble that remark, Klaatu. I'm one of those 4 listeners.
I'm also one of those 4 listeners.
Yeah, there are a lot of 4 listeners for Klaatu's podcast.
But no one's denied being lazy.
They come in groups of 4, I guess.
Yeah, groups of 4.
I'm one of those listeners.
It's a fractal. You get more complex as you reduce in number.
Fractals are cool.
They're amazing. I really want to check out some of the tools that you were talking about. I think it was in possibly that article. Is it Zeos, or am I making that
up?
Yeah,
Zeos is one of them. GnoFrac 3D. I don't think I mentioned that in the article, but that's a really cool one. Or sorry, GnoFrac 4D. And Fire, F-Y-R-E, for Peter De Jong maps or whatever. I don't know if those count as fractals. I think they do. But it's a cool program. And Cosmic, QOSMIC, for making fractal flames, like the electric sheep kind. It's pretty cool, too.
Here's the story of my life, more or less. So I wanted a fractal for this movie project that I was working on. This is like probably 5 years ago now. And so we went to this, the company making the film was dealing with this effects house. And, you know, no one had a lot of money, so it was all independent and stuff. So we went to this effects house. We were like, we want some fractals. You know, we want you to do your computer magic and generate some fractals. And they kept sort of like trying to pretend like they didn't know what fractals were. And I was like, I've got to find some computer program to generate fractals for us, because I knew that it couldn't be that hard. You know, I mean, I knew it could be something that computers could do. And it took me, like, literally, I mean, I that project was long ago finished. And then later I just happened to get into Linux. And then finally I discovered all these really cool fractal generators. And I was like, where was this, like, 5 years ago?
Yeah, totally. Mandelbulber is another really cool one. Yeah, Linux is great for fractal art. And Evolvatron also, it's not strictly like a fractal program. I don't know if it really has anything to do with fractals, but it's a generative art program and it's really cool.
That sounds very cool. I mean, the name sounds great.
Yeah, you click on, like, it gives you a selection of different images that have been randomly generated, and you click on one and then it generates more based on that image. So it's really neat.
Nice. Yeah, I took an electronics class recently, and we made one of the projects in the class was to make this little synthesizer, and your touch actually completes the circuit. And it has this really unstable, apparently, amplifier chip in it. I forget the serial number. Apparently, it's a really well-known chip. And it would generate, obviously, the sounds, you know, based on you completing the circuit. But every sound was, like, different. And I asked the teacher if it was, like, were we achieving, like, true randomness, and he said no, but it was really an interesting way to just, you would play around with this thing, and it would just make these weird noises. It's basically circuit bending, I guess, but it was, I wish I knew what was going on inside of that chip to create these variations in sound.
That sounds super cool.
Ruchi, do you have a link to some of the practical art that you've created?
I haven't created all that much myself. I could post a link to one thing, which is a desktop background.
Why isn't that on Unix porn?
Well, you also have a POV ray trace that you have out here on one of your websites. I was just looking through your websites.
Oh, you saw the POV ray stuff.
Yeah, at least one of them.
Cool, yeah. I don't know POV ray very well at all. I'm fascinated by it, but I don't know the language. I mostly just, like, take pre-existing templates and experiment with them and change parameters and stuff and see what I get until I get something cool. I'll go ahead and post a link to that Mandelbulber art that I made for a desktop background in a sec when I find it.
I just did a little searching. I had thought that I remembered a fractal program on Commodore 64, and there was one.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like something that would be around forever, you know, like since they figured out the computers could do math. It seems like someone would be doing fractal programs.
I remember there was one in BASIC way back, because when I worked for Radio Shack, I remember typing it in to one of the Trash 80s. Oh, it was a color computer.
Nice. So really pretty fractals.
Well, I remember one of my friends in college with an Amiga, he was really into Ray Trace, which is a totally separate thing, but he would run it on the graduate server 3B5 overnight and then bring it back into his Amiga.
Oh, wow. What's this? So this is done in K Bulber, you said?
K Bulber is just the name. It was done in Mendel Bulber.
Okay, got it.
This is a nice picture. I like this.
Cool, thanks.
That looks quite organic, doesn't it?
I know. It's like
rock
yeah.
or something that's been eroded. Says Ken, looking at the image that's on KDE Look that's in the show notes.
Any time for California.
Fireworks are starting here in Portland, Oregon.
All right, is it your time zone next?
Yep.
6 minutes.
That's kind of funny that you mentioned fireworks, because I just now realized that I didn't hear any fireworks here at all. I wonder if people missed the New Year here.
Are you in a suburb?
No, not really. I'm in... No, wouldn't say
so. Probably because you're in an industrial estate, Plateau.
Here's some people do it a bit too early sometimes. Maybe the day before or the night before a little bit, or in the evening too early, but sometimes, yeah. Too early a bit.
Wow, that is a pretty cool image.
Surely they just weren't shooting automatic rifles into the sky?
That's what it sounded like here. Of course, you know, we're in the South. We like to blow stuff up.
Well, here, for some reason, there are some people around here blowing off fireworks for like 2 or 3 hours before the midnight hour.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm on about. Basically, too early, but for some reason, maybe.
I'm not close enough to Urban to remember any fireworks on New Year's Eve. I have seen a few from the county fireworks show from the cab of a combine, because we're still cutting wheat at that time, which is kind of interesting.
Is that what those things are called? That cut wheat? They're called combines?
Yeah, because it was a combine of the old header barge, which would cut the wheat off, and a binder, or rather a thrasher. You know, well, you've seen the pictures of the old thrashers, you know, tractor with a belt.
Yeah.
Driving the old thrasher. So it was a combine of the header barge, which, you know, and then later was a binder. Yeah, between the two, there was the header that would just slice everything off, and it would trundle up to a wagon where the guys would standing on the wagon would physically grab bundles of wheat and wrap twine around them. And then when they got to, you know, at some point they would stack these bundles into a shock. And then later you had the binder, which would do all that automatically, you know, usually pull behind a tractor. The first ones maybe pushed by horses, but ground driven, and you know, it'd swath the wheat off right at the ground, and you'd have all these stalks, and it would make these bundles, and then you pick up these bundles and put them into shock, and then you would throw the bundles into the thrasher. And then you had the combine in the late 20s and early 30s, originally pulled by a tractor, and then by the 40s, late 40s, self-propelled, that you would have the header platform that would just cut the heads off the wheat and then do the threshing, you know, all in the machine. And then you would pour out grain into the truck.
Okay, can I interrupt you there just to stop the recording for a second? And I would also like to welcome Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle.
It's 2 minutes, isn't it? Isn't it 2 minutes?
Nope, it's now.
Don't forget Portland.
My clock says it's got 2 minutes. 1 minute.
Oh, yeah, mine's now 1 minute. Now 1 minute.
We'll do it in 2 minutes. Fine. Be stickles.
What, 1 minute or so?
1 minute.
It's fine.
I think it would have been made for cleaner audio if we'd just all sort of conceded to agree that Kim Fallon was correct, and then we could have maybe adjusted in post or something, or not cared.
Yeah, nobody would notice. It was going to take me 2 minutes to finish reading the big long list anyway, but now you've ruined the effect. Thank you very much.
30 seconds.
Don't forget Tijuana.
And let's see, what Canadian province is up there?
4, 39, Victoria. 40, 41, 42.
Well, Victoria's not a province, it's a city.
RUJIC dot, I'm sorry, RUJIC dot net is, I've never seen table,
Happy
HTML
New
table.
Year.
Happy,
Happy
New Year.
Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Happy New Year to Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, Seattle, San Jose, Las Vegas, Portland, Oregon, Canada, Vancouver, Whitehorse, Tijuana, Mexicana, and Pitcairn.
Yep. Happy New Year to that, and Happy New Year to Ruji.
And Boyd Park.
Is this being streamed somewhere?
I can't even hear you guys over the fireworks.
Yeah, it's been
Happy
streamed.
Happy New Year, Spork Saber.
People from all over the world are listening to you, maybe.
Or hackerpublicradio.org/og will get you the og feed streamed.
8 hours, 1 minute. See, y'all, ham radio is good for something.
That's nice.
I was listening to, I used to have the shortwave radio, this Grundig shortwave radio that I was listening to one day. And I was listening to, I think, 10 megahertz or 10 kilohertz or whatever, time station. And in between the time, people would jump in and talk. And they'd all silence like cockroaches for the time. And then they'd talk afterwards. It was really brilliant.
That's how they do it. That's the National Bureau of Standards. And they will give different types of forecasts in between the time signal at the top of every minute.
Yeah, it sounds bloody gorgeous, to be honest with you. I really like the sound of it.
Was that a wind-up radio, Sigflup, or no?
It was 3 AA batteries.
Okay. I have a wind-up version, or I have a wind-up Grundig, and but I don't think it takes batteries, so I could only listen to it in, like, you know, as long as I could charge it from the wind.
Yeah.
Well, what y'all heard, I actually can run this thing off of a solar cell.
That's cool.
I would like to continue my ban on all talk of ham radios, please.
What?
Because, yes, this ban is now in place.
His parents were killed by ham radios.
No, his parents were killed by amateur radio people.
No, because it's far too an interesting hobby, I guess, and I have enough hobbies, thank you very much.
Also,
I think Ken is trying to say move on to another topic.
No, actually, what I want is all the ham radios, like everybody on Hacker Public Radio seems to be in ham radios, and I still haven't gotten a episode in from two hams either side of the continent or in two different countries talking to each other. How awesome would that episode be? So no talk of ham radios until I get to that episode. Thank you very much.
I'm not into ham radio.
I think you gotta wait till Fab figures out how to do ham.
Have you heard of?
Please no.
Have you heard of Earth to Moon to what is it? Earth to Moon to Earth communication.
EME.
Yeah, that's pretty wicked.
I bounce signals off of, sorry, Ken, but I bounce signals off of meteorites.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you news from...
Can we talk about number stations?
No, I'm only joking. Fire ahead.
No, I've never bounced signals off the moon. Love to try it, but I don't have the equipment or the money to do that.
But just what I mean? That is such an awesome hobby, like... That you're sitting in your room, right, and you're bouncing signals off the moon. Come on.
Sometime I need to put you guys in touch with who are hams with my buddy. All his, you know, he doesn't do any digital stuff. All his, you know, all his sets are, he collects sets from the 40s.
Oh, that's big. There's some people that just love that stuff. I'm all modern stuff now.
And we went quiet again. And we've got, well, we've got just under 4 hours left, haven't we? Yeah.
Sorry, I'm only quiet because I'm working, so.
Yeah, I'm encoding the first today's, as in Mondays, as in the New Year's Day show for Hacker Public Radio, so my machine is churning away here.
I was in 2012, the first 3 hours. Yep. Yeah.
So it's the WAV file is 1.1 gigabytes. It's truncated silence from 4 hours down to 3.5.
The WAV file, do you say?
WAV.
1 gigabyte. Did you say 1 gigabyte for that?
Yeah, 1.1 gig.
Wow.
Nice.
That's not you don't mean to say, Ken, you don't mean to say you're going to post it on the right day.
Hey. Excuse wait, wait, me.
When people download it, is it going to be 1 gigabyte? That's what, well, I mean,
no,
it's just got broadband now anyway, I guess, but I mean...
It'll have, it'll encode it to MP3, AUG, and speaks. So this might be one for those of you who are short of bandwidth. You might want to listen to this one on speaks.
Is it Audacity or you're doing it in OM for whatever?
No, if you go to the link that I will be posting shortly into the chat, the scripts are all on Gitorius.
Okay.
Which we're working on now. The scripts itself, they've done quite a lot of work. Corbatu and has given a lot of help. Actually, I can't even remember all the people who contributed little hacks and stuff. And it's actually working out pretty nicely stable. The only thing that we need to do now is get the tagging. So the idea is, regardless of what you send me, if it's an audio file, then it'll be converted to a temporary WAV file. And then from there, it'll be converted into AUG speaks and MP3 from known good formats. So the only thing we need to do now is get the ID3 tagging from different formats to different formats. The two different formats enough, but the from is a bit more complex. Just pasted it into the show notes there. But the script has got a lot of comments in it at the minute because it started as one script and it's going to be broken off into two. So the first part will be convert whatever comes in when people send in a file to a very, very, very small speaks file that can be just, for spam checking. And then random chunks, 3 or 4 random chunks from the file will be also just taken out and emailed to the team that just checks for spam. And then there's also going to be a spectrum, spectrogram of it done, so like a JPEG, so that you can see whether the intro and outro has been added.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay.
That's a pretty awesome thing of socks, actually, that you can do that. Hey, good morning, Leafy. Do you want to say hello to everybody? Say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. What's your name?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's Sinead.
Happy New Year.
And you were up Sinead in the middle again. Of the night. Do you want to say hello, Happy New Year in Dutch?
Gelukkig New Year.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to go and make breakfast, folks.
Happy New Year.
Talk to you later.
See you in a bit, Ken.
Bye.
Take care, Ken.
Yeah, take care, Ken.
Later, Ken.
Now I can talk about ham radio.
Woo!
Yeah, now that old man Ken's out of the building, we can talk about anything.
Yeah, but it's still being recorded.
Yeah, do you think he's going to actually listen to this whole thing and find out that we talked about it?
Since he listens to everything at like 4 times the correct speed, he just might.
Let's talk about.
Well, if I could do accents, I was going to suggest earlier in the day we do an hour as fake Ken Fallon.
LOL.
Oh, somebody mentioned doing a fake Dan earlier. The Outlaws guy doing a fake. Yeah, that was earlier.
Well, the real Dan showed up, so. I don't know if you were there for that.
Oh, yeah, I missed that.
I was there for some of that.
I missed it, dude.
Yeah, he was here.
Yeah. Well, he did post in G+. He was going to come in. I was afraid I was going to miss him. I had to do stuff in town, and then everybody in town decided their time was more important than my time, and I never got back.
KT4KB John. I am curious about something about ham. Like, in terms of if someone wanted to I don't know, explore getting started with ham. Maybe they're not going to make a commitment yet, but they want to look into it. Where would they look, and like, what equipment would they be looking at? Would all this person need is like a radio, or do you need to get like a radio and an antenna and something else? Like, what would you start looking at if you were totally new to ham? Aside from the FCC licensing and stuff, I mean, just to look at like pricing and stuff.
First thing I tell folks to do is go to www.arrl.org, and there'll be a link there that they'll actually send you some information, and then you know, talk to nuts like me.
I am talking to a nut like you. I'm talking to you. Give me a link. Give me something I can look at. I wanna know what I need. Like, just a radio? Is that all I need?
Is software defined radio the way to go these days?
Yes and no. I would not. If somebody was just interested in taking a listen, and you know, I'd say a portable radio with something called a beat frequency oscillator, a BFO, for the lower priced ones. The more expensive ones will actually have a setting for USB and LSB, which is upper and lower sideband. It's a type of transmission where you'll actually be able to hear the hams on HF bands and hear the long distance communications. But there are some, and I wish I had them, Klaatu, and I'll get them to you. There's some links where you can actually use a software-defined radio and listen, and either get your curiosity up or quench it if nothing else.
So you're saying that you can access the signals from ham radio from a computer without any special equipment?
Yes. And I don't have the I don't have any of the links, but there are some folks that have put radios on the internet that you can listen to, tune around, and it may either quench your interest or make you more interested.
But you can't transmit your own signal that way?
No, not without a license.
And what do you need for, like, if you were going to look into the licensing and stuff like that, what would you need to broadcast? What kind of equipment?
Well, the basic, the beginning license, which is called the technician license, the easiest one to get, is basically, I think it's 50 questions now. It's a little bit of theory, rules and regulations, and it's not very difficult. In fact, I know, you know, kids as young as six that have passed it. Most people can learn what's in that book in a month's time.
At some point, don't you still have to pass like Morse code exam?
Not anymore.
Oh wow! I was still doing that when I was in high school.
Yeah, it has changed. When I got my license, which is close to 20 years ago, to get on HF band, which is where you get the long distance stuff, you had to pass Morse code. Now in the United States, you do not have to pass any Morse code. And there's a funny story about Morse code, and now that you don't have to have it, believe it or not, it's gained popularity for some reason.
Probably because they know all the noobs aren't listening in on it.
Yeah, would you recommend KT4 that if someone wanted to really utilize and be a good ham, that they should know Morse?
It's a personal... It'd be to fully utilize the privileges that you can get with amateur radio. Yeah, knowing Morse code is helpful, but my computer could copy Morse code better than I can in my head. But I use Linux, so, you know.
They used to have it if you worked in a radio station and there was a license that you got to work there, you had to know Morse code. And they cut that out. That's been several years ago.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when they totally cut it out of all the amateur licenses. It's, well, it's probably been 15 years ago. Well, it's been quite a while.
Can I interrupt to have two people say good morning to you?
Come. Certainly.
This is...
We're talking about him.
Loshi.
And?
Broderick.
And what are you going to say to people?
Happy New Year!
You can say it in Dutch as well if you want.
Happy New Year!
Gelukkig New Year!
Okay,
Happy
that's
New
it,
Year to you
Happy
too.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Year.
Happy okay, New go Year. Have breakfast.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, folks.
Happy Good New session. Year.
It's now a HPR tradition that that has to be done.
I'd like to welcome God Mode into the channel.
Hey, thanks. I'm God Mode. I'm Vince from Malaysia. Well, I'm American, but I live in Malaysia. So, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Second for you, isn't it?
This is something
yeah,
I was
thinking
of. I'm afraid I'm going to have
no, it's still the first.
Actually, no, it's like 4 o'clock, 4:18
in the Yeah, it's 4 in the afternoon.
Eight hours ahead of me. I'm in the UK, in England.
I tuned in a couple of times. This is the first time I actually heard somebody speaking.
Well, God Mode, I said something earlier in the day that there, as this 24-hour thing passes over the globe, there are certain areas we don't have a lot of general contact with. So, belatedly, you know, for your New Year's, I'm glad to welcome you into the channel.
What do you do over
Sorry,
in Asia,
I had the, I have the push to. Call me Vince. That's just a screen name. I'm sort of a web developer. Because I have a 1-year-old daughter and I've been focusing on her for the last year or so. But I'll get back into it. I have godmode.com. You can find my. If you want details, you find my latest blog entry there. You can see that's and it's a story, so I'll spare you the gory details. If you want to read it, it's right there at godmode.com.
Checking out your blog now.
Yeah, I'll have a look as well.
Just in general, I'm a web developer. I'm an open source enthusiast. I use Linux as my primary operating system. I think I'm probably typical Hacker Public Radio listener, you know, with all the open source stuff and Linux. I focus on just the basic HTML, CSS, JavaScript, PHP, that kind of stuff. I know those. I'm a pretty average guy as far as that technologically concerned.
But what version of Linux do you use? Ha ha.
Yeah, I was going to ask that actually. Which
Well, right now I'm using Ubuntu 12.10 on my main system. I have some other like old beat up laptops that I have some other stuff on, but I'm thinking of switching away from Ubuntu because Unity is driving me crazy. Not because of the launcher, the dash, but because I can't stand the darn task switcher because it doesn't work the way I expect it to. It doesn't switch to the... that's another rant for another time. Maybe I should do a podcast.
What was I going to say? Yeah, I thought you were going to say Ubuntu. And, I used to use Ubuntu for years saying that, and then they claimed to be patching and so on, and then I moved on to Mandriva a bit, and then to Mandriva, I was talking about it earlier on here. And then I help a bit with Mandriva on the community side. But yeah, I mean, there's loads of distros you can switch to, really. I mean, they're as user-friendly as Ubuntu, really, or more for some, or about the same. In fact, the advantages of the distros such as Magia and Mandriva and PC Linux OS, all in the same kind of family, is of course the control center, the graphical control center for setting up the system account, the hardware. Well, it's more a launcher, it goes off into other programs for that, but that's one advantage it has, those kind of distros have over
over all these other distros, really.
Seb, I have to agree with you on that. I was very recently writing an article on Magia 2, and everything I was doing in the thing, I would be like, okay, how do I do this on Magia? I'd go looking around, and I'd always find everything I needed in the control center, and it was really, really kind of nice, because, I mean, like, everything from setting up Samba shares to managing users to changing groups, just everything. It was pretty nice.
Is the control panel significantly different from the KDE system settings?
It looks different. It doesn't call up a KDE panel. I don't know, Seb, maybe you know more about, like, exactly where they get those, like, that control panel, but it definitely, to the user, it looks like a completely its own thing.
Panel is specific to Magea and Mandriva.
Not exactly. I mean, it originally comes from Mandriva, and then old Mandrake, if you like, the old name, 2003.
That's before. What I'm saying. It was something that was developed on Mandrake and then passed on to Mandriva, and now it's on Magea or Magea, however you pronounce it.
So well, not just Magea, to be fair, it's in any distribution that is based on Mandriva, really. So Magea has it because it's a fork. PC Linux OS has one as well because it was a fork of Mandrake.
It's specific to Mandrake derivatives.
Rosa, Unity Linux, not Linux, Unity.
I ran into it on PC Linux OS years back.
Yeah, PC Linux OS, those kind of distributions, they have it. The other distributions, for whatever reason, they seem to lack that kind of feature. I mean, yes, okay, GNOME has a kind of control center and KDE, but it's nothing like this control center we're talking about now. This is a proper one for the whole operating system. Think of it like the Windows control panel, if you like, but
yeah, I was
done
gonna say,
right.
If you've ever used Windows XP, it's very familiar. It's set up almost like Windows XP control panel.
I'll tell you the reason I got into Ubuntu is really I'm just following the community. Now, as far as control center and settings, there seems to be a bunch of them out there. I haven't used Magia. I'm not familiar with Magia at all, actually. I'm familiar with the others. But I get lost between GNOME and KDE settings, and sometimes they conflict or sometimes they act differently depending on whether you're using a GTK application or a KDE/QT application. And I used to be, I'm very comfortable in the command line. And so I'll often look for the configuration file if I can. Like somebody mentioned Samba configuration. No problem with smb.conf for me. Now I used to be a very faithful Red Hat user, and then even for the first couple of versions of Fedora, but then I sort of fell in love with the apt, the Debian package management system, and then
so
apt.
Synaptic? Do you mean Synaptic, or do you actually mean apt to the commands? Because, I mean, I still like Synaptic to this day, and that's actually when I tried PC Linux OS out. It's like, yes, it got the control center that we're just talking about, but they also have Synaptic, and maybe it's changed. They're gonna get rid of Synaptic for some reason because it was old or whatever. But yeah, when I was trying it, I was like Control Center and Synaptic, and then all the kind of usual distribution that you use same kind of programs. So that was good.
Hey Vince, are you using Push to Talk? I put in the chat. If you're not, that's what most of us are doing. You hold a key down or double tap a key to talk rather than using the sound level in the background. But I've noticed you seem to be keyed all the time. So
yeah. If you mean God no, but I noticed that too.
You know, I know what you're saying. I'm using an Android app to do this because I was walking around just now, and I actually did have it keyed. So that's my fault. I don't think this Android app, which just says Mumble for Android Beta, I don't think it even has a voice-activated mode. So I'm going to just be more careful about how I use it.
No, it's okay, really. It's just we were, it just lights up and it's like, it sort of says you want to speak, but it's really, it's working okay so far anyway.
Yeah, it's working for you, Godmode, because we're not hearing background stuff. Some people are keyed all the time. We hear absolutely everything in the background. You're not doing anything annoying. I just throwing that in there in case you want to change your settings. But if you're an Android, it may be completely different.
Yeah, I heard that 5 minute the I'm a little behind on my podcast, but I heard that 5 minute or so recommendation for all the settings. I'm in a very quiet room intentionally because of that. But actually, I think I'm sitting at the computer now. I think I'm going to try to find a mumble app for my Ubuntu here, and then I may sign out and sign in with that.
Yeah, you should find a mumble client just in the repositories if you're on Ubuntu.
Yep, app git install mumble.
Mumble is probably in pretty much most of the distributions now in the repos, oh, yeah. Really.
Mumble is awesome.
What I wrote an article about Mumble. Because I was in Fuduntu, which is based on Fedora.
Oh, Fuduntu, oh, yeah.
And they don't have it included. And if you're in like a RPM distro, the Mumble people don't put out the RPM image out there because they assume it's got to be in your repos.
Oh, if it's not included in Fuduntu, I can probably just say to the lead developer. I know when I see your chat from every now and again, I can just say like, "Oh, you should probably add Mumble into repos." I'll probably do it because, in fact, he was trying to get he was saying to me recently how he was trying to get that optional. I've mentioned earlier, but he was told me I was trying to get the optional Netflix port, the patched wine with the Internet Explorer, with the Mozilla Firefox Windows and the Silverlight for Windows, the unofficial Netflix support. We talked about that earlier on here, but yeah, he was doing that.
This program to welcome the U.S. Anchorage, French Polynesia, and the Marrakesh Islands to 2013. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
It's only 3:30.
Yeah, some of them have half-hour time zones.
Okay. I don't know that much about the time zones out there in the Pacific.
I kind of like the echo effect.
Cool.
Yeah, why is that?
Join the software. You'll be free, hacker.
Yeah, what do you say on the ball, Ian?
Somebody mentioned Fuduntu.
What is Fuduntu? I've heard about it. Yeah, but yeah, I'm yeah. Like, what the heck is it?
Yeah, I was going to.
Fedora or Ubuntu?
That's what I wanted to answer. The name is a bit confusing because you think sort of Ubuntu or whatever, but no, it's not. It's based on Fedora, and the idea is that, well, it's rolling release as well, but it's stable. You know, you get your package, it's not going to break on you, or it's not supposed to break on you. But like PC Linux OS, that's rolling release as well, but it's not like Gen 2 or Arch Linux or whatever, where you get latest this and that and something might break. But the whole point as well with Fedora is that the idea is they're going to keep GNOME 2 as long as possible, the actual proper GNOME 2, not Mate, not Cinnamon, none of that. They're going to have the actual GNOME 2, the proper old one from upstream, you know, going to have that as long as possible, and then whilst keeping everything else up to date, so the Linux kernel and all that, and then eventually they might have to start replacing bits of GNOME because of other changes, but that's the idea as well. And then when you install Ubuntu, it's like I install it from been in Linux magazines here in the UK every now and again, like Linux Format, Linux User and Developer, I think, as well. They mentioned it as well. And I've had it out on the CDs with magazine, the DVDs with magazine, and I booted it off from some of those. And it's installing, it's kind of like, you can sort of, when I first installed it, I could sort of see certain things. I think it was Docky in there, sort of things that you sort of think an Ubuntu user made it, kind of like somebody who liked the add-on programs that Ubuntu users tend to like for the old GNOME 2. So things like Docky or whatever. I think he had that in there anyway. But I think, and then he got rid of all the mono stuff more recently, I think. But So stuff like that, they have some add-on stuff. Make Gnome 2 quite good. And then the, I think the branding that I've seen is quite good as well. And that's it, really, as far as I know. And it's quite a small, not really that known. I mean, you've got an IRC channel, there's not that many people there. It's quite, it's there, it's not that known about, but it is a good distribution. And also, it's supposed to be quite good on netbooks or low computers with low resources because... Because, well, for example, a guy at the Lug, I think probably about 3 months ago, he mentioned how, or on the mailing list anyway, he mentioned how he'd put for Dungeon on his netbook and how great it was and how it ran so well on his low-powered netbook. So there's that side to it as well. It's basically good on low-powered computers as well.
Is there a, yeah, it's kind of got the Cairo dock down at the bottom. But, you know, for some reason, they're not porting Mumble into their repos and... maybe because I specifically looked for Mumble and Fiduntu, but there were dozens of sites. Why doesn't Fiduntu have Mumble? We can't podcast.
I think Mumble can probably be added. Just got to like talk to the guy I know about, or I mean I could try, but they would probably add it in if I said like, look, you should probably put Mumble in because whatever, you'd probably add it in then.
However, I take issue with what you said about Gentoo. I've never installed any package on Gentoo and had it break my system.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Well, Seb, if you've got a contact in Fiduntu, tell him to, you know, just do a search on Fiduntu and Mumble, he will come up with all kinds of sites that this would be a great distro if we had Mumble in there, which shows, you know, I think how many people rely on Mumble for podcasting.
Yeah. That was Rolling Bleece. I that's what I meant. I didn't mean Gentoo specifically. It's just this idea that if you have a rolling release, that in general, that there's this idea that it's more for developers, more technical people, this idea that things are going to break packages because it's not a version distro. But if you have something like PC Linux OS or Fiduntu, then, well, they are rolling release, but they're fine, or as far as I know, things aren't just going to break. But there's this idea, the general idea, that if you have a rolling release of some sort of distribution, that it's going to be all, things are too up to date or things are going to break or whatever compared to a version distro. This is a general Linux community idea, which, you know, it's probably not that true really, but it depends on distribution, but that's what I was basically trying to say.
Yeah, I was going to say Gentoo's rolling release, but I've, like I said, they're pretty rock solid. They've never had anything break. They are almost their approval process for getting packages into the repos and for stabilizing package, they're almost as stringent as Debian.
Well, folks, time for me to get some beauty rest. It won't help, but it's time.
Yeah. Good night then. Happy New Year.
Yeah. And happy New Year.
Good night. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Enjoyed it all.
Debian is, yeah, Debian's got a rolling release as well, I think. Or partly, yeah. Or Debian testing is basically a rolling release, isn't it?
Is Fedora now rolling release, or is that just something that's speculated for the future?
That was the idea, that Fedora would have a rolling release, a bit of a rumor, but it's not at the moment.
Actually, that's, I believe it's called Tumbleweed. Is the project name where you can install Fedora, or is that SUSE?
SUSE.
That's right. That's SUSE. Okay, never mind. Yeah, SUSE has a thing where you can take any one of their releases and install it, and then once you get going on Tumbleweed, it essentially turns SUSE into a rolling release. That's not Fedora. I'm sorry.
I want to say something similar. Well, I was going to say it, but I wanted to see if anyone else had something to say about Fedora first, which you've obviously done. But actually, Mandriva and Magia, they've got rolling release as well, really. It's just Mandriva's is Mandriva Cooker and Magia's is Magia Cauldron, but that really is the packages playground, as it's called. It's for the developers. It's going to have the latest this and that. I mean, not even the quality. When the quality assurance team do the ISO testing, which I'm going to be helping it out with a bit for Media 3. But anyway, when they get the, what happens is they basically get made a special like pre-release, and only they have access to it to begin with, the quality assurance team. And then you have a build or two, and then one of those builds will become the alpha or the beta or the release candidate, whatever it is at the time that's the next one, and obviously the final release. And then if people install that and then do updates, they actually end up running the rolling release, with the exception of the final, I suppose we've got to change the repos. But yeah, so even there is a rolling release, but it is a versions distro. And obviously Ubuntu is done a bit differently, for example, but same with the whole daily build thing, for example. But yeah.
I guess you could technically call Debian a rolling release, because once you install Debian, if you want to get the latest distro, it's just a dist upgrade.
Well, Debian's a rolling release depending on whether you have the version names in. So if you use, I don't know, Wheezy or whatever, then it's not a rolling release. But if you use stable, then it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All you do is enter one command and it automatically installs whatever the latest packages are for Debian. And so it's a rolling release. Because I know I have Debian on my file server.
You broke up pretty bad, Sigflop. What'd you say?
Yeah.
Oh, I said I was gonna get going myself.
Okay. Bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye. Good
night.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, best New Year's to you guys too.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Take care. Bye. Bye.
What was that, Klaatu?
Oh, guys, I think I'm going to take off, too.
Good night.
Eh.
Well, it's only 3 hours and a bit left. I might as well stay awake for that.
Well, as if you guys are saying goodbye, I thought I'd say hello. And what's been happening over the last 8 hours or so I've missed?
Oh, we keep it private, dude, man.
You're solving all the problems of the Linux world and the tech world in general. It's nice to hear.
Oh, we did that by 8 o'clock this evening.
How many of you guys have been here the whole time?
Well, I haven't, but I've been here quite a long time. All coming back and then, yeah. I haven't been here the whole time.
I've been away for about half an hour a couple of times, but that's about it.
You're doing better than me. I was gone for like 6 hours. I was here pretty close to beginning. Klaatu, you've been here the whole time, haven't you?
Well, with the caveat that the website lied to me, and it had like this errant countdown as to when the show was going to begin. So I was here when the website claimed the show had begun, but I found out that other people were already here before that. So since 7 o'clock, I have been here, but I understand that's not actually the beginning.
But you also took a bunch of mysterious coffee breaks.
We always counted on people to jump in
front of the computer the whole time. No, I don't think any of us could lay claim to that.
He's got one of those old coffee pots with, you know, with a drip.
Yeah, I just have it set up and it just drips into my mouth.
That's something I could do with.
Uploading the first episode of HPR just crashed my machine.
What?
Awesome.
How big is the file? Are the files, I guess?
It's not that bad. It's just the upload just took all my bandwidth and knocked me out of everything else here. It took the entire internet connection down.
So this explains why sometimes it's a couple days.
No, it's just I'm also recording and I've got about 3 or 4 different streams going in and out of here. So I was also downloading the next 2 episodes at the same time as uploading, so.
The HPR music connection went, huh?
I am just giving you the business, kid. I mean, if occasionally it takes a day and a couple things get posted, you know, we understand real life and all that stuff. And I mean, you're the guy, you know, stuck with doing it for right now until it gets automated.
Reggie, not to bring this back to Mumble yet again, but you said you wrote an article on it, so I'm curious. Had you heard of Mumble as a gaming chat client, or did you hear of it more of a podcasting tool when you first heard about it?
I first heard about it really recently through the Linux Basics podcast, actually. So that's Wow, there's a lot of feedback right there.
That was like your punctuation mark.
But yeah, so I didn't realize until I researched it that it was a gaming thing too.
Well, yeah, I was aware of Mumble back when it was just for gaming. I do a lot of gaming, so, you know.
I found out about because of Cribbins, I guess, really, because I was going to go on it, and I did. So I also found that was for gaming, so around the same time, I guess.
Okay, so it's kind of mixed. I'd heard of it. I always thought of it was like some kind of podcast tool. I mean, that's what I literally thought it was designed for. People were like, no, it's a gaming thing. I was like, what do you do for gaming on Mumble? I didn't get it until people explained how people talk to each other during games. News to me.
Cloud2, you're not a gamer?
I am not an avid gamer, no. I try to be. I want to be. I like the culture. I just can't. I'm not interested in the games. It's weird.
I feel like such a geek imposter because I'm just not into gaming at all.
Exactly. That's why I want to be. I'm like, I'm supposed to be into this. Because when you say you're into computers, people are like, oh, have you played, you know, I don't know. Darn it. What's a game?
Yeah, yeah.
Like one of those
World of Warcraft?
So here's my short list of games that I play. StarCraft, StarCraft 2. I play all of the Warcraft games. That's Warcraft 1, Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3.
You admit to that.
I have dabbled in World of Warcraft, but I know if I really get sucked into it, there goes 6 months of my life. I have played Call of Duty. All of the Call of
Duty
games.
That's what I was thinking. Call of Duty.
I have played various Modern Warfare games, the Splinter Cell games, the Rainbow Six games. Let's see what else. Oh, and my wife got me Black Ops 2 for Christmas. But I also have the complete Command & Conquer collection. Every Command & Conquer game ever made and their expansion packs, as well as, let's see, Knights of the Old Republic, Lords of the Realm 2, Lords of Magic 2, Duke Nukem 3D, Quake. I have all of the Quake games, all four Quake games, and Quake Wars. So, yeah.
I didn't understand a thing of that. What was all that about? As a non-gamer, I didn't understand
that's
much.
That's all the games that I have in my collection. You have,
sounds
you
like
have,
a lot.
Yes, I have like a couple of shelves full of games.
Yeah, I drive an awful lot of this industry. I mean, assuming we're mostly IT folks here, they're definitely worth paying attention to, even if we're not so much into games. Now, I've played a little World of Warcraft, and that's the only other time I've ever used Mumble was with World of Warcraft. But I'm just, and I wouldn't be into this field if it wasn't for video games, trying to make them work on an old DOS machine. But
yeah,
somehow I didn't carry on with my, I didn't get addicted enough to fit in with that crowd.
Yeah, see, I'm addicted to gaming. Oh, but see, here's the interesting thing. If you're into open source games, a lot of the first person shooters within the open source games are based off of either the Doom engine, one of the Doom engines, or the Quake 3 engine. So like NexWiz, Salt Cube,
Sauerbraten,
what's another one? Open Arena, Urban Terror. I play all of those, and they're all based off of either one of the Doom engines or the Quake 3 engine. Take your pick.
Welcome, Pegwall, to the channel.
Hey, hey.
I like games. Well, oh, I'm a gamer. Oh, yeah, totally. Tetris, Pac-Man, the Linux games, such as what's it called? Maelstrom, the Asteroids game. I'm seriously, I like that game.
Galaga.
Bug Squish, I really like that. I'm not joking.
I play all of the old. I play all of the old Atari games that have been ported over to Linux, as well. So like X Galaga, Asteroids, all those.
One
Did
game
anyone
that
else
I've actually,
notice
yeah.
when the guy that does the voiceover for L Breakout stopped saying damn it when the ball falls through the bottom?
Huh?
I like Worms.
It's an open source Breakout clone. And the guy that programmed it does a voice for certain events. And one of them is the ball. You know what Breakout is. It's the thing where you got the Pong at the bottom and you bounce the ball against the bricks at the top. So when you lose the ball.
Oh, Breakout, isn't it? Breakout?
That's a good game.
Yeah.
L Breakout.
I love that game.
Yes. I like that as well.
So I figure at some point he started getting more attention for his game, and he figured it was politically incorrect for the game to shout "damn it" when the ball went out of the playing zone.
And there's a key breakout as well. So there's actually two. Perhaps I installed those recently in my Gear 2 install. And but yeah, I don't like the basic games. I also like Worms. I used to play the 2D Worms. I used to like play Worms or Party Worms on again a lot before. And of course, there's Head Wars and Wormux, or there's another one now as alternative.
That's okay.
Similar games.
You want to talk about politically incorrect? I also have the Age of Empires collection, and Age of Empires 2 has a cheat in it. You put in the cheat. The thing with Age of Empires, you're talking about armies that are on foot or on horseback, and they actually make them go really slow across the map, right? So if there's this one cheat that you put in that gives you, at the center of wherever your base is, your village, town, whatever, it gives you literally a streaker, and he shows up on there. He's not anatomically correct, but he literally shows up on the map completely naked, and you point him in a direction, and he literally shoots across the map like Roadrunner.
Any of you guys ever dabbled in Second Life?
I tried it once, and
I couldn't figure
it out.
It just
wasn't for me.
Oh, that was such a business buzz about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, not me.
Yeah, I tried it about 4 or 5 years ago. Didn't really see the appeal.
I did it just so I could make a character, just because that sounded like the most fun thing ever, and it was, but I never actually got into using it. I just pretty much did it to design a character.
Has anyone checked out Mozilla's Banana Bread demo? I haven't actually tried it yet. It's entirely written in HTML5, from what I hear, HTML5 and JavaScript.
What is it?
And it's a first-person shooter.
Really?
Oh.
Banana Bread?
Do you shoot bananas?
I have no idea why they named it that, but hold on, I can tell you the URL. I'm just going to it now for the first time. I heard about it on a podcast. I haven't actually gotten to sit down in front of the computer. It's developer.mozilla.org. Just search for Banana Bread. it's a long URL. You'll find the one from Mozilla.
I think I just accidentally sent everyone a Banana Bread gift package for Christmas, searching for this thing. Sorry.
There is a game I want to install. I just haven't bothered to do it yet, but when I see the video, I think, oh, that looks pretty good. And it's a game that's in development. It's called Greedy Car Thieves. It's a Grand Theft Auto alternative. I don't know if anyone's heard of it here, but if anyone's interested as well, I mean, obviously, I have to look it up or whatever, but it's been made for Windows and Linux, and it's in development. And they had Tech Bytes. They had an episode with the developers not that long ago to talk about it, but it's like that game. It's like, I've got to try that out.
I need to jump in here for a second. It looks like we're losing the feeds again. I'm guessing the feed connections are actually falling out of the channel. They're on a timeout again.
Probably been 8 hours. Can we track them back in anyway?
We have to actually do something with them to actually like put out some text, otherwise they'll just bounce back out again.
Oh, yeah, so this Banana Bread looks like almost like NexWiz or Open Arena. Speaking of first-person shooters, you know the ID Software, the makers of the Quake series, was about 2-3 years ago now. Since Quake 3 was so popular, even after they open sourced it, because of all the mods everybody had done with it and everything, they created a website called Quake Live, And essentially, you create an account, you log in, and you can play Quake 3 right from your web browser on any operating system.
Looks like we lost the feed again.
Who has access to get to those machines?
I just tried to connect to Kevin's machine, but it seems like it's unreachable. Maybe it's rebooted itself. I'll keep trying and see if I can remote into it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
We could all move to the main channel again like we did last time.
You can also, the OG stream is still working, so hackerpublicradio.org/OG.
For anyone who can't hear, you can.
hackerpublicradio.org/OG.
As long as things are recording, I guess, as well.
Dude, man, do you have any idea why your voice sounds like that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's the quality settings, but what do I need to have it set at?
He's sucking on helium.
I don't know, but someone else was just asking me about this issue like 2 weeks ago, and I'd never heard it before, and now I'm hearing it, and I'm wondering how you achieved it so that you can unachieve it, and then I can tell this other person how to unachieve it.
Well, let me quit and see if I come back in. It's different.
Seems like it would...
He's sucking on helium.
In the past, what's happened for me, if you just quit and restart, you no longer sound like helium.
Seems like maybe your ALSA setting, your sample rate, might be incorrect. I wonder if you just like restarted Pulse or ALSA or whatever is serving your sound, if that would fix it, restore it to defaults.
Am I any better now?
Oh, you're still sounding no. Yeah, I think it is a sampling rate. You might try checking and seeing what the sample rate. Well, hang on, let me check.
I tried that. I think. Are you going to try to see what their sound card is set to, Sound Chaser?
Actually, I was just going to look and see what the rates are coming across.
Oh, okay.
On his connection.
Could the people on the MP3 stream please move to the UGG stream? People on the MP3 stream, please move to the UGG stream. Thank you.
But the people on the MP3 stream can't hear you.
Yes, they can if I keep dragging it back in.
Oh, okay.
Happy New Year from California, by the way, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Not precisely the time.
Are you Happy New Year?
Happy New Year.
Yeah, I've still got about 3 minutes.
Where in California are you?
Folks, no. The time police will come down on you if you're off by it.
I'm actually off by 58 minutes, so.
I just came back from the casino, so, you know.
Yeah, Park Saber, where are you in California?
I wished you happy New Year, Spork Saber, at the appropriate time, so you'll have to go back and listen to the apps.
Thanks. I'm over in Sacramento, California.
Yeah, I'm going to get back.
I was just in the Bay Area.
My wife is born in Sacramento, so. And if she ever figures what she's got to mute, she'll say hi.
So what is it,
less than 2 minutes for Alaska at this point?
I believe so.
And Hawaii, maybe.
Nope, welcome Hawaii, back, nope. Hawaii is in a different time zone.
Yeah. Hawaii is one of the last, I think. Hawaii is one of the last time zones, I think, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, Jay Rue will tell us for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say he'd know.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes,
yes, indeed.
Hey, hi. This is Oak.
Happy New Year.
Yep.
I just pasted the times that we need to note now into the channel if somebody wants to read them off for us in 30 seconds.
Apparently no one wants to do that.
No, he said 30 seconds.
They're waiting 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51...
Happy New Year!
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 Happy New
Year!
Woo! Cook Happy Island, Year. French Polynesia, and some parts of Hawaii.
Adak, Aleutian Islands, French Polynesia.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.